Hello and welcome to Abnormal Mapping. This is episode 174. I'm your host, Em. With me is our co-host, Jackson.
Hello, gaming.
That's what we're doing. I was literally gaming 5 minutes ago when you were like, I'm ready to record, so.
Yeah, well, what were you gaming?
I was playing Mario Kart World Tour on my Nintendo Switch 2.
Fucking you didn't!
No, I didn't. Absolutely not. I was playing Sword and Fairy because I have to finish it for work. Because I stupidly agreed to do two game clubs. This is what I've been playing. The Legend of Sword and Fairy is a RPG from 1995 from Softstar for MS-DOS. It is like the... it's like a Taiwanese company. It's like the Chinese RPG series that is continuing into today, but started here at this point. And I agreed to do it for Novel Not New months ago, and I'm like, I've been playing it for weeks, and I'm still like a little over halfway.
I want it on the record that as I knew your situation was pressed for time, I had another game club lined up. So we can do this. It won't take too long. I always come in with like ideas just to help ease the burden. You're like, no, I want to do it. I want to do an RPG. How are you feeling about that now? How are you feeling about the RPG choice today?
I mean, our actual game club? I really wanted to play it, is the thing.
Yeah. I'm glad we did. I wouldn't have fit it in. I mean, I guess I would have done it for ATB.
I mean, would have eventually done it as a game club if we didn't do it this month. But I was in the mood for an older game because we had done we'd just done a new game. The thing you had suggested, if I remember correctly, was like a newer game. We're doing another newer game next month because when we need short games right now, new games got the goods.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. We do have another old short game on the horizon, but that'll be announced next month.
Yeah, I'm excited for that one. I didn't think we'd ever do that for a club, I'm gonna be honest with you, but I've been playing Sword and Fairy's all right. So like the thing is, it's like got such incredible vibes. All the enemies are cool, all the environments are cool. I think the story is pretty good, even though the translation that I'm like we've got is fucking terrible. It's fine. It's like, it's not bare minimum, and it's got like some character to it, but like the text just randomly changes color for no discernible reason. And like sometimes the word wrap is broken. So like some of the text will just go off the screen a little bit. It's only like half a word usually, but like there's just a shoddiness to the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of those. There's something charming about playing a game like that. Anyway, it's just like a normal ass JRPG in the classical sense. It's isometric, which is kind of annoying. The thing that matters here is that it has maybe the most maze-like dungeons I've ever played. Phantasy Star 2 and 3, sit down. Your turn is over. Sword and Fairy is here.
Incredible.
Yeah. And so I've been having a laborious time anytime I was in a dungeon. Because, like, they're just... It's not like Final Fantasy IV where, like, every... Like, eventually it kind of all funnels you back and everything's rewarded. It's like literally... You know, I'm just going to send you a picture of like the place I'm in as of like 3 minutes ago. And you'll be like, oh no.
Okay.
Yeah. And there's like a route. So someone in the Discord, Umbrella Terms, famous, formerly made YouTube videos, had played this game in Chinese and had a guide to provide, like to offer me. And there's maps in there, which helped me a lot when I don't want to run through the dungeon really fast. Anyway, this is the dungeon I just got done with. Actually, I have one more floor left, but it's really short. So I'll be done very shortly after.
This is like fucking Diablo 2 over here, but it's not at the speed of Diablo 2.
No, it's got a bunch of battles. They're not random, like the enemies are on the map, but you can't really avoid most of them. So
it's like Chrono Trigger.
Yeah. It's faster overall than Chrono Trigger, but yes.
These are some dungeon-ass dungeons.
Yeah, they're dense. And, like, the cities look like this, too, basically. It's really fucked up how, like, packed the world is. But, like, in a way that just is, like, hard... Like, it just is exhausting sometimes. Because, like, you'll just be, like, going from dungeon to dungeon on the world map, but it's also, like, a, you know, grasslands where every little turn that isn't, like, the primary turn takes you, like, three turns in, but then, like, just dead ends. It, like, here's a tree. Here's, like, a mountain. And you're like, this is exhausting. Why is everything, like, a trial? Sometimes the gamer longs for the Final Fantasy 13 corridor. What if I could just run straight down to the next point?
I mean, that's how we got there.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is how old RPGs used to be. They're annoying sometimes.
I think there needs to be like an up and down cadence, like a sine wave of like density in the dungeons, and then it gets sparse again, and then it gets dense, you know? Every once in a while, maybe you get like you go to the really big city, the really big city is dense in the way that other cities are, but no, everything is just like this. And you're just like, I'm tired. I'm tired.
This is how I feel about the wizardry likes that add first person exploration in the overworld as well, and not just in the dungeon.
Yeah,
like Might and Magic, the whole world is like that, and it just makes traveling really exhausting.
Yeah,
I think that game's fun. Might and Magic 1. I didn't finish. There'll be an article. I started a project playing old RPGs. I'll talk about that.
Would you like to segment. Properly? I guess I have one more game before I do that. Nothing big. I've been playing Hatsune Miku Project Diva Megamix Plus.
Hey, is it still Miku?
On the Windows PC. Sega put this out a couple years ago.
Is it still Miku?
Yeah, it's Project Diva Miku and not Future Tone Miku, which is like, you know.
I don't really understand the difference, but sure.
The way they do note charting is different.
Basically. Oh, like the fundamental gameplay is different.
Yeah. There's like both in the game because it's like, it's not that different, but it is like different enough that there's like Future Tone controllers and there's Project Diva controllers. And the Project Diva controllers are like the four buttons in a line with a touch strip. And the Future Tone controllers are the ones that have like a fake, like diamond D-pad and face buttons. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I prefer the Project Diva vibe just because I started playing these. I like imported a Project Diva for the PSP way back in the day. And so I'm just a classic Project Diva fan. That was like one of the first things I ever imported was a Hatsune Miku game, which I feel like makes sense, honestly. And it's fun. You know, I got the fucking Switch controller and it just plugs in the PC because USB everything. And I play it. I hit the buttons.
Miku.
The touch strip is really annoying. I'm not a huge fan.
Mm-hmm.
But it's fine. Every modern rhythm game has like an annoying like secondary input that nobody likes doing as much as like the primary input, which is just hitting buttons.
Yeah, I see what like the new rhythm game situation is occasionally. I'm not like paying that much attention, but occasionally one will flick through and they're always doing weird gimmicks still.
Well, like I don't really know, like, everything's in arcades now, and all the arcades are, like, tied to, like, accounts and stuff, so it's just hard. Like, there's just not a scene for new stuff, or they're, like, a gacha, right? That's the other option,
yes.
Which I'm not really playing, because they shut down Love Live, and then even the Love Live sequel flopped immensely, so who cares?
Mid-tweet.
Yeah.
And it was so good, it was so
and
good.
So I play Hatsune Miku, and I play Sound Voltex, which has a special controller, because that's got six buttons and two knobs. Other than that, I just play like Muse Dash, you know, like just normal ass classical rhythm games. Just hit some buttons.
Fair enough, yeah.
I guess I could play Osu has the Taiko mode, and I do have a USB Taiko drum. I could do that. I haven't done that in a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't necessarily know the PC rhythm game situation. It seems overwhelming.
Yeah. Well, it's like those are the big ones if you want to use like a controller, unless you're just playing Clone Hero, which I have not gotten into yet.
Well, there's always big sales on like DJ Max Respect. I'm like, is this one anyone likes? I can't really tell.
I mean, some people like it. Yeah, it's just like, you know, I think the idea, most people either like have their one game, it's like the only game they play, or they play a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. I tend to be a little more, play a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
Kind of casual about it.
That makes sense.
At some point, I feel like I will probably be one of those people who ends up with another fucking... I don't have any plastic guitars, but a plastic guitar to play Clone Hero.
It's yet another rhythm game now, please. No one plays Clone Hero anymore.
Right. Yeah, okay, whatever. I will play it, though.
I vaguely saw there was drama, and they've all moved over to a new program. I'm like, okay, well, you just import the Rock Band chart to play them. I'm like, yeah, well, it doesn't make any difference to me.
Yeah. I don't really care. Can I play Bark at the Moon again? Okay,
guess
good.
You can,
I'm happy.
Hey, guess what? You can play Bark at the Moon again.
Good, 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 good. That's what matters.
Confirm.
Yeah. That's it for me. I haven't really been playing that much because all my free time went into the game club or Sword and Fairy because I've been fucking busy.
Yeah, you are busy as fuck.
Yeah, my day job sucks. My health sucks. What are you going to do?
Yeah, true. True, true, true.
Tell me about your RPG project, because you did not announce this last time.
I didn't announce it last time. I launched a website called...
A website in 2025?
A website about video games.
That sounds so fake.
I was considering what format to do, and then I realized, like, when I tried streaming, I enjoyed streaming Final Fantasy XI, but it was kind of awkward. Like, I don't like forcing myself to stream, like, only.
Yeah.
So it's making a project out of streaming would just make me feel constrained. And also RPGs, you kind of want to play them. You don't want to, like, streaming, you have to be on. And RPGs are good for, you know, you're on a phone call or you're doing something else, you know.
Oh, I'm watching Dia play Xenosaga while I'm playing Sword and Fairy.
Right. Like, so I didn't want to have a, like, necessarily do that or do Let's Plays. And I thought about doing YouTube videos. And I was like, but I would hate, like, once I've written a script, then I have to do, like, way more work to make the script into a video, and I don't want to do any of it. I just want to write a blog. And so I was like, what if I write a blog? and so that's what I'm doing. It is a blog, like I said, alltimebangers.com, ATB, little pun there. Pretty proud of that one. It was somehow available. I don't know how alltimebangers.com was not taken. But I am its proud owner now. And if someone else types it in, they'll be like, why is this a fucking JRPG website? But so every week there is a little 400 to 800 word write up about an RPG I've played as I vaguely go through my backlog in chronological order to clear my whole backlog of RPGs. And you can go find the list of all the RPGs that I am not going to play more than 20% of. I don't know. We'll see. I make it very clear that I cannot play every RPG ever made. But we'll see exactly which entries we check in along the way. Just made it to Dragon Quest last time, and I have a couple more months of backlog able to go on this weekly schedule, but the weekly schedule won't be able to continue. I can't play an RPG every week and do everything else for the rest of my life, so we'll see. But for now, I'm very happy
with it. Even if all you did was do RPGs, I don't think you should play one a week. I think that's, like, insane.
It wouldn't be possible.
Yeah.
Especially once you get to, like, the mid-90s.
Yeah.
And things go off the rails.
So what have you been playing recently for this?
Well, so I'm currently at Dragon Quest III.
Oh, right.
At the time.
Did you see my post about my solution to this? I've come across? Okay.
Yes. So I've been playing Dragon Quest III, and like you, I was like, okay, Dragon Quest III HD Remix, I'll play that. It'll be the new definitive version.
If you don't mind me doing a little bit of runway here. So I played Dragon Quest I and II on the Game Boy Color.
Yes.
Which I loved. As I did that, I watched a Let's Play of 1 and 2 on Famicom. Mm-hmm. I remember who I watched. Probably H.G. Bailey, I'm going to be honest. Classic Final Fantasy Let's Player who's been going for fucking 20 years.
Yes.
If you want to watch someone play a Final Fantasy and, like, kind of over-research it, but not in a way that, like, it has good production value, he's the guy. I don't really vouch for him beyond that, but I have watched a lot of his videos. When I got to 3, I was like, well, I don't really want to play a Game Boy Color game again, because it has the problem that the DS games have, where they all are in the kind of the same engine, so it gets really samey, and you just get kind of... I was tired of looking at the Game Boy Color Dragon Quest by the time I finished 2, you know? And so I was like, well, I'll play something else. So I was at the moment where I was looking at, like, do I want to play the Famicom one? Do I want to play the SNES fan translation? Which, you know, everyone loves in terms of, like, aesthetics, but the translation leaves a lot to be desired. You had vouched for the Switch version, which looks like ass, but has a good translation.
Well, so it depends what you want. I like the modern Dragon Quest.
Me too.
Translations. I think they're good. I value the consistency in, like, fucking spell names.
I got over that for the Game Boy Color one. I think the Game Boy Color ones are super charming, but I had just done 2 of them and I didn't want to do a third, mm-hmm. you know?
And there was a project to, like, pour in the official localizations to the old Dragon Quest games. They did 1 and 2 on the NES Famicom versions, but they never made it to 3. They were going to do the NES and SNES version. They had big dreams, you know, fan projects, right? They had big dreams. Yeah. Didn't all pan out. So there's no definitive version. Like, if someone translates the Switch translation to the SNES version of Dragon Quest III, then that would be the version I would recommend.
Yeah. So here's the thing is, while I was contemplating this, like, what am I going to do next? They announced Dragon Quest III 2D HD. And I was like, well, that solves my problem. I'll just wait for that to come out. Which leads us to the next thing you were going to say.
Well, and if you watch the original trailer... It genuinely does just look like the SNES version translated to the HD 2D style. The grid and overworld map is the same. It is not the same in the video game they released.
Well, that's why it took like an extra year and a half.
Yeah, I was like, oh, they fucking made it a whole new game. They like expanded the overworld map like 5 times the size. There's now objective markers that you can't turn off. You can turn off like the objective markers that are always there, but if you go onto a screen and find a story relevant NPC, it'll still have an exclamation mark by them, even in the most minimal hint setting possible, which I turned off literally everything you could turn off. I was still getting stuff like that. I was still getting like, once I touched a story NPC, it would like change the text in the pause menu to be like, now go to this thing and go here, and it just completely ruined the because at the start of the game, you leave the town, and if you go to the north, you go to the second town, which is where you've been directed to go. But if you go to the south, you get to a cave that leads to the first dungeon. And if you go to the north, you get to an NPC that tells you the cave is in the south, right? And you are just rewarded for exploring if you just found it. And then if you find the NPC, it's just like, oh, hey, that guy was pointing me to the dungeon. I already found that. Haha. You know, RPG stuff, right? But here, that's tied to like a noted progression in your start menu of like objective tracking. And also the game's really, really easy immediately just off the bat, just like the XP level. Like I put it on normal and just the XP levels were crazy easy. And the auto battle
was stuff, also like, not a difficult game to begin with.
No, but there's a little bit of pushback. Just a
there's a deliberateness to its progression, yes.
Yes. I was like, I just set an auto battle, and I'm fairly sure I could just walk through the whole game and win it. Like, for example, especially in the... there's a change in the later game, but you get fully refilled your health every time you level up.
Which means that's a very modern RPG thing.
For the early game, when you're leveling up all the time, you just don't have to go back to town. So the rhythm of Dragon Quest is just gone. And like I said, all the world is different, and much bigger. The game is much slower. It's just not a faithful recreation of Dragon Quest III in the way I expected. It's basically a new game with, I guess, the same script. And it left me immediately very...
How's the script?
It is still based on the Switch script. It seems fine.
Oh, okay. They didn't do new story stuff?
Well, there's new story stuff in there, but the stuff that is, you know, they haven't changed... what was already there, right?
Okay.
But there is all new story stuff in the game. There is expanded stuff. But, okay. Like, all the... like it's called Paddy's Party Place. All Trades Abbey, etc., etc.
Yeah. I know all about All Trades Abbey. That's in a bunch of other ones.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's not called that shit in the SNES translation, where it's like, oh, I don't fucking know what... it's all got different names. It would confuse you when I talk to anyone. I like the consistency, so I played the Switch version.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, I can't do this for this fucking, I can't play this for this project now, because I am kind of interested in it, but I want to talk about Dragon Quest III, a game I like, and this just isn't that, and it's not giving me the same vibes, and I went to look, like, watch the first stream of Sackchief, known Dragon Quest YouTuber, playing it, and he was immediately like, why is it so easy? Why do we have like 7 level ups? Why is this here? What's do I have to change this? What's going on? Just immediately thrown by how weird a project it was. Because it's just streamlines a lot of stuff out of the like moment-to-moment progression and exploration of Dragon Quest. But also the combat isn't made... like, the thing with modern RPGs, a lot of that gets streamlined, but the combat is like more complicated and has way more systems to compensate. But this doesn't have that either. It's like too easy for like a challenge run type thing. I'm sure you can like really try if you turn up every single setting and whatever. But at least even in the hard mode, it just seems, you know, you kind of go through until the battles get hard toward the end, I guess. But I didn't get that far. I'm just like, okay, I'm gonna go play the Switch version, I guess, and blog about that, because I don't want my Dragon Quest III blog to be about the differences between remakes, right? That would be against the spirit of the project. But it was with, I was expecting it to just be a single, now we have the answer and everything's easy. But I don't think Square Enix have released a new version of a game that's ever done that one time. It's always, oh, and now there's a new thing that's got some advantages and some disadvantages and is also a completely different fork of a thing. It's like, why? Every time? Why are you doing this?
Star Ocean 2 is mostly the same. It's like been made easier for sure, but I do think it's like a totally reasonable way to play that game. And there's difficulty modes if you so desire.
Okay.
Like, I don't like the addition of, like, a stagger meter and, like, a block button. I think it changes what the game is fundamentally, but, like, it's not that big a deal.
Okay. Because this has convinced me maybe I should play Dragon Quest Star Ocean, the original version.
Well, I mean, I love Star Ocean 2 on PS1. It's great. It's just the new version's, like, half as long. So, you know, you get the same story, it's half as long. It's got a better translation also, I feel like, overall.
Yeah. So we'll see how I do that. But that's a while away.
Well, I'm kind of like whatever on the HD 2D as an aesthetic. I think it's nice looking in Star Ocean 2. It's not as nice as the PlayStation game, because PlayStation game just has a wild aesthetic. But I really love all the portrait art. I think it's, like, really good.
Star Ocean 2 is technically not an HD 2D game.
I know, but you know what I mean.
I'm just like, that's so weird. They have another retro remake that's, like, this one's in Unity and not in Unreal at the HD 2D. So it's its own thing.
Yeah,
no one cares.
Still, like,
Square,
yeah,
no one cares.
The most average person, it just looks like one of those. Yes, I know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, my resolution that I made just a couple other day ago is I'm going to finish Sword and Fairy, and then I'm probably going to go back to Persona 5 for at least one dungeon. But then next time I find, like, a lull in Persona 5, I will play Dragon Warrior 3 for the Nintendo Entertainment System.
Yeah.
As God intended.
Just the original ass NES version.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, don't get the delocalized ROM hack. That one's bad.
Oh, is it? I wasn't even going to look at that, but is it? What's going on with that?
Oh, that's the one that has my favorite forum post of all time.
Oh, all the bad spell names.
Where they've made all the terrible spell names, and then they were, like, yelling at someone else who did things for not being as accurate to the Japanese, and, like, got someone to make a ROM hacking account that own them so bad they, like, edited the URL so you couldn't see the images he was quoting with the spell names in it.
It's a bit
of an inside baseball story, but yes, that the delocalized products are, like, we're the most faithful and honest to the Japanese, but then just, like, because it's literal translations of fucking Dragon Quest
sometimes I don't mind, right? Like, when I played Mother, I used one that was kind of like a, like, you know, delocalized version, because they took out Nintendo censored a bunch of sprites and stuff like that, and, you know, you kind of gotta do your research if ever you're assume the delocalized ones are better, though, is my general opinion.
You always gotta look at the reception to a fan translation, the actual group that did it. Because ideally I do want the most, like, you know, the best translation of the original, but it depends on a lot of context stuff, right?
But I also think there's something important to, especially, like, big games, recognizing that, like, the English version that was released, even if it's compromised, has value to experience, right? Yes. It's not just like, oh, and then there's the English version, but nobody cares about that in 2025. It's like, no, that's the thing people have nostalgia for in the English-speaking world, and none of us speak another language, so, like, don't be that weeb. It's annoying.
Okay, but I can be a little bit of that weeb about Final Fantasy Renaissance, which is really annoying me. Final Fantasy Renaissance is a Unity remake of Final Fantasy 1 that is complete the whole... It is the entire game in the NES, as the NES version, but, like, remade in a new engine, so you can, like, triple speed it, runs beautifully, there's an arrange mode with a bunch of new classes and everything. It would be the definitive version, but it has the NES translations, so all the spell names are wrong, and I can't, like, buy anything and understand anything anyone's saying.
Yes, you can, because you know what Lit 2 is. What are you talking about? Lit 2 is Thundara.
I know, but I'm just like, it's Final Fantasy, Well, come on.
I've watched so many people, like, play through Final Fantasy for the Nintendo that, like, when I play Final Fantasy 7, they didn't have Thundara didn't exist yet, right? Final Fantasy 7 is, like, it's a Bolt 2, I think, in that game, but it's like one of those style games. Yeah.
I don't mind it in 7 because I just am used to that one, I guess, but I do generally side on the, like, I would like to play.
I care a lot about this one is, like, Phantasy Star, and it's, like, the same locations and some of the same people. I don't really care for Final Fantasy where they're all kind of separate. I know that Fire 3 is Thundaga, or Firaga. You know, I don't need that translation necessarily.
Phantasy Star is really annoying in that the official localization is fucking terrible, but then the good fan translation doesn't have auto mapping. And so it's like, do you want your left leg cut off, or do you want your right leg cut off?
After one, there's no maps. Like, there's no mapping one another, so it doesn't really matter. So
yeah, I don't worry. My Phantasy Star players in the can. Blog.
Yeah, everyone plays Ages at this point. It's really easy. Everyone has a Switch, so.
So I look forward to my Phantasy Star.
Auto mapping is too powerful. Ultimately,
yeah. But the actual thing is going back and playing these and realizing, man, the fucking Western games abandoned. No one cares. how are they not like modern versions of the Ultima games? They're really important. And the answer is they ended up under EA, so like,
Oh yeah. Like there's the Wizardry thing and that's it.
Yeah, and that was like a...
And like Baldur's Gate has like a newish version, right? I mean, that's old, but like they did do work.
Yeah, but
on
I'm
those.
Like, I mean pre-isometric, like yeah. You know. You can get like, I guess you can get
Well, here's the thing, if you're back to like, I don't know if this is true of Ultima. I haven't played Ultima. I watched someone play Ultima. Well, Ultima seems pretty cool, but when you go back to like Rogue and Angband and like the really classic like ASCII stuff, yes. Those games just run. You don't have to do fucking anything to them. They're great.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of re-releases like that for Western games. Like all the Gold Box D&D games have that.
Mm-hmm.
I had to, when it comes, because this started out as just JRPGs, and I was like, I should probably play like Wizardry and some stuff, and then like added a bunch of Western RPGs in. And then we'll see how that goes going forward. But like, I only have a couple of check-ins to the D&D games listed on my thing, and who knows how many of those will actually be ones I play. But I have let me take a look at this list. I have Pool of Radiance, and then I have Eye of the Beholder a few years later as the ones of like, those are the big relevant ones.
Okay.
It's, should be, once we get to the mid-90s, it'll be a lot easier to make sure I can play. Like the games become a lot more playable, the versions become a lot more consistent.
They get way longer though, is also the problem.
That's the other problem. But the problem now is, like, I played Might and Magic 1, and I played the Japanese PC Engine version, I think, with a fan translation, which is easily the best version of the game, incredible sprites, but I couldn't finish it, because the fucking ROM would just crash and break all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And it just was, like, the further you went in the game, the more unstable it got. And that's just, like, a thing with trying to find good versions of these old Western RPGs, which a lot of them tend to have their best versions be on, like, and then it got ported to a Japanese PC in the mid-90s with, like, the best sprite work you've ever seen. And I'm like, oh, that version's...
Yeah, you're going to figure out PC 98 emulation. And you're like, no, not really.
They're like, oh, do you want to play the FM Towns version of this game? And I'm like...
The Sharp X68000.
I've been so...
And you're like, I just give up. Fuck you. Fuck the Sharp.
We've been so spoiled by being into, like, fucking Final Fantasy or whatever. Just games for babies that are on everything.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the project's been a lot of fun so far. I don't necessarily know exactly the long-term viability of how it'll go, but I intend to keep it up. All I know is no deadlines. It's a long way to keep trucking at a pace. Because I don't want to force myself to play an RPG on deadline like I did this week. With a game that never ends!
my thing with this is I wouldn't want to go in order. I'd want to jump around. The order is exhausting to me.
I loved it. Here's the thing. It's kind of exhausting at the start, but the stuff I'm really interested in, and this is the reason I like playing games in order, because I do this for everything, right? But the reason it appeals to me specifically for RPGs as to why I made it like a real project as opposed to some of my other things, but I just do because I'm like that, is... It's really the mid-90s to late-90s jumping around stuff that's wild to me. Like, you get... you got Pokemon, Super Mario RPG, and then, like, Wild Arms and Daggerfall in, like, the same year.
Yeah.
That's crazy to me.
I'm like, just saying, every once in a while, I'm like, I want to play an old blobber, and then I want to play, like, a modern anime game, and then I want to play, like, a portable game that's, like, 6 hours long, and I just really, like, I like counter-programming against what I played last, you know?
This is how normal people are. I would not suggest being like me. But, I mean, I'm probably still going to play modern RPGs, because I'm not going to get...
Well, you're also, like, idly still playing shooters, so, like, that is saving you from just RPG malaise, right?
Well, yeah, because it's not going to be my only thing I do. It's just the product I have running in the background. Did I get my clear on Batsugan before the last episode? I don't think I had.
I think either you'd just done it or were working up to it.
So either shortly before or shortly after the last episode, I did get my 1cc of Batsugan special.
Is that the first game you've 1cc cleared?
No, but it is the first one that I feel proud of. Like, I'd 1cc'd Devil Blade.
Okay.
On easy and normal, but that's just a much more... It's a more achievable one. It's my first arcade game I've 1cc'd, I'd say that.
Okay. I've never 1cc'd anything in my life.
And it wasn't, I mean, it's the special version, so it was a one all, technically not a 1cc, because it loops.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier than the initial version, because this is the one where they're like, oh, we're really figuring out bullet hell. What if we made the hitbox, like, teeny tiny?
Yeah, it's only got to be a pixel, really.
Yeah. And that was so fun and satisfying to beat. And I'm continuing to just, like, play shmups occasionally, put them up on my YouTube channel, and... like, if I Thunder Dragon 2, I'm like, that one's fucking great.
Yeah. I'm like, would we ever do any of these for abnormal mapping? Probably not.
If we did one, we would, like, just do a Toho, I assume.
And I was going to say it'd be, like, Radiant Silver Gun.
I mean, I'd do Radiant Silver Gun.
But yeah.
I just imagine.
Because that's what I really want to play and have not played.
Because
I'm a huge Ikaruga fan. And even that back in the day, people were like, it's not as good as Radiant Silver Gun. I was like, how dare you? But I haven't played Radiant Silver Gun.
The shmups are really good and really hard, and I'm, like, enjoying playing them. I don't know which one will be the next one I really try to knuckle down on, even if I do. I don't, you know.
Panzer Dragoon Zwei. We're not going to do that.
Is that... That's not a shooter, is it? That's a... Isn't that more like a Star Fox?
Well, yeah. It's like... I mean, that's a shooter. It's like a behind-the-back, like, paint target shooter, but it's still a shooter. I don't know
what the name of it is. What's the name of...
I just think that's like Afterburner. Afterburner is still a shmup. Like, yeah, it's like a different version of a shmup.
But. I mean, it is a shooter. I wouldn't call it a shmup. I would say shmup is always down. I would not call it behind the back rail.
It's a horizontal shmup. Shmup? Yes.
Horizontal shmup is a shmup, but a horizontal shmup is, from a top-down perspective, going
is
left
it Rideon 3D a shmup? And if you say no, I'm going to punch you.
Well, hang on. Let me Google it. What is it called?
Rideon 3D. It's a launch GBA title.
Okay, I would say no. That's just my gut.
That's just a shmup. If you look at gameplay of it, that's just a shmup. You're out of your goddamn mind.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. They're all shooters, but for some reason, when I say shmup, I would imagine rail shooter is, I guess, the term for this one, right? Rail shooter.
Sure, but I mean, on a vertical shooter, you are just going up. Like, that's also on rails. I don't understand. I think the difference is fake.
I mean, it's a different perspective, but yes, you're not, like, entirely wrong.
Yeah.
I just mean, when someone says shmup, my mind goes to, there's a pixel thing that I'm dodging bullets on screen, and it's a top-down kind of perspective, or side-on, or whatever. When it's behind the back, I guess rail shooter is what I would say.
Yeah, I think to me, the rail shooter implies, like House of the Dead, and not you're in a ship.
Oh, okay. I just not...
Because, like, the thing with House of the Dead is that you can't dodge. If you can dodge, that's a shmup. If you can't dodge, that's a rail shooter. I think that's my main difference.
I don't think that's the difference. I don't really understand exactly where people stand on this, but I've watched just enough, like, YouTube in the space now.
Ooh, here's the thing I'm going to
care
say.
A lot for some
reason. Maybe controversial opinion. I don't care what the STG guys or whatever the fuck it's called care, like, make the distinctions on this on.
I'm just saying they care a lot about they're the difference between, like, a run and gun and a rail shooter.
I bet they care, but I don't care about them. So I don't care what their opinions are.
And I don't... I'm not in enough to really know exactly where the opinions are. I just know they are very strongly held.
Well, all 16 of them can be pissed at the I don't care. Making the character action guys who are way more of them also mad by saying you're just action games. Knock it off. There's nothing special about you.
That's just true.
I know. Oh, you have no more games, right? Or do you have something else?
I guess I don't really have anything else. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to go through every single shooter I played for 10 minutes, but yeah, those are the big things. I played some RPGs and I played some shooters.
Yeah. We have new podcast art premiering.
That's
with
this
episode.
That's so true!
We got Boo Cannon, famous graphic designer extraordinaire, to make us new art. I was like, oh, it's been a while for a refresh. Let's see if Boo's available to do some new, like, a new podcast art. And then she came back with, like, a design ethos of, like, these, like, album covers of games. And I was like, this is going to be a lot of work, but let's fucking do it. So we will slowly be in adding those to every old episode. I'll make a gallery when we have them all together. I'll probably be doing it in background and, like, just put it up when we're done. It's going to take months, but it does premiere at this episode. We've got some good art. The website and the Patreon already show the new, like, just generic abnormal mapping art. I already did that work, so that's just taken care of. it's nice. It looks good. It's sharp.
Yeah, I'm excited. So we're both very excited. Because like, there's a bit of tedious work of filling in the text to be done, but then we all have to pick an image for each part of the album artwork, and that part, yeah, we're both excited to do.
Yeah, I've already done three of them. They're in the Dropbox if you haven't seen them already.
I've got the link to the past image for what I think it should be, but I don't know if you had a different one.
I did number one, and I did the two games you covered in episode two.
Oh yeah, I went to like, what's the one you haven't done yet? And it was the Linked Past one. I was like, it should be this from the manual. I think it should be this one.
So here's the thing that we'll just have to discuss. This is kind of like not for the
It is vibes based per episode. We can do what the fuck we want. There is no hard and fast rule.
I like when it's a screenshot of the video game. And I understand that like when Boo did this, like neither of the examples Boo provided are screenshots of the video game. In fact, Boo did a mock-up of like the Gravity Rush remastered one. That Gravity Rush wallpaper was my phone wallpaper for like a year and a half. I have a lot of affection for that image. It's like the famous one of Kat standing sideways on the building. It's like the green incredible. Tower. And stuff. Yeah, it's great. Classic image. But I do also just like I did Pokemon XY and it's just like a fucking blurry ass 3DS screenshot. And I think it's beautiful. I think it looks so good.
I mean, you're not wrong. I just think like for different games, you want different images. The Iron Hand one is going to be of the fucking X-ray hand cover. It's going to be.
I don't really want it to be the logos of the games, though, is the thing. If you can find that hand without the Einhander on it, then yeah, we can do that.
Wouldn't that just be a cropped version of the cover?
I don't know if you can make it work. But, like, there's something to be said about, like, you like the title is, like, our title, right? And there's just an image that represents the game. I like this as the vibe.
I Googled it and immediately found a version of the thing with the art at the bottom. So, that, yeah. Okay.
Some of those will probably end up A-B testing. Like, we'll both have ours and see
I'm
what
sure we'll have
like
different it. Ones. For the, yeah. That this is the fun part. The yes. annoying part is all the other stuff. But choosing images for every game, that's delightful.
Yeah. Yeah, I knew exactly what I wanted for the image for DMC Devil May Cry, which is Dante with the giant baseball bat hiding his dick. And I got it. I found it. And I put it in there.
Well, it was funny to me because Boo's images are all very aesthetic, right? Very cool images. And it's basically because Boo chose good games to do it with.
Well, yeah, DMC Devil May Cry does not deserve cool aesthetic images.
And it's just
much.
He
deserves Dante hiding his dick.
True. And so I'm curious where we'll go for, like, there'll be a split. Some of them will be serious. Some of them will be, funny ones.
Well, there's like some of them. I'm like, we're going to have to go into the game and like take screenshots. Cause they don't exist online in a way we could use.
That's true. There are some of them like that.
Yeah. Speaking of ancient games that, did you see Burn Band, the famous abnormal mapping game, got a Steam thing for the version that's been worked on for years.
Yeah. Burn Band lives.
Yeah, it's like 3D now. It's super weird. I mean, it was in 3D, but it was all sprite-based. Now it's got, like, models, and it's really strange.
I'm very excited. It's going to be cool. Batman's cool.
I was a little off-put by the aesthetic, but I am really excited to play it.
It looks much more in line with the sock pop stuff in general.
Like,
the modern sock pop stuff with, like, the round people.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't disagree. I just was, like, really shocked by it.
I'm just glad Burn Band's back. Walking around the Burn Band city is basically all I want from video games.
I'm like, how much more game is there?
There's a list of features on the Steam page, and it sounds like zero.
Yeah.
The feature list is
also,
waddle around.
It also says I decided to return to this to make it like a full-size game, but also it's still just like wandering around a city, the video game.
The feature list is waddle around, discover secret areas, slap stuff, get lost, see the sights, alien. So it sounds like it's just more city, but it didn't add mechanics or anything.
Yeah.
Which is fine for me. I just want to vibe and be in the place.
Yes.
Can you imagine if Burn Band had, like, fucking mechanics? It'd be weird. So, yeah. I'm glad that's coming back. You did go through and correct everything with Moby Games, but I do want to, on the record, when we had the spreadsheet filling out the details, I was like no scoping the developers for like 99% of the games we covered.
Yeah. I went in and used the exact Moby Games listings. When we do them in the thing, they will be truncated. Cause I don't want the full names of every company are too big, is the actual thing.
Yes.
But I didn't want to start from like a good data set and then reduce down from there. I noticed you weren't filling out the fucking platforms, which was not helpful.
Well, because I don't know what to say for half of them.
The lead plot. We already made this determination. This is behind the sausage. But like for 360 era games, we are picking the 360. It was the lead platform of the era. For the generation after that, we're picking PS4 as the lead platform of the era, unless they're like exclusives. Like, but for multi-platform games, we're picking whatever the, like, clearly the lead main platform was.
The hard part is going to be getting to the modern games where everyone plays them on Steam, but they're technically new generation on everything games.
If we hit the PS5 era, I'm willing to, like, the answer is PS5. It should be PS5, but I'm willing to say Windows if you want to say Windows.
But a lot of them are just on PC and Switch.
Sure, but like, if you're like okay. Elden Ring, I'm like PS5. But
I don't mean that one's the big games actually, like, you know, the Final Fantasy and PS5.
Yeah.
I meant, like, we didn't do it, so this one's me, but like, what would Hades be?
Windows.
Okay,
I'm willing to make this determination. Yeah, I like it.
But like, once you get to like modern indie games, they're all Windows, basically.
I agree that that is Windows. Yeah,
I don't know when the distinction changes.
And you're playing that on Linux, actually, because you're playing on your phone.
I'm gonna be writing Linux for every PC game.
Oh, that'd be really funny.
We're not doing that. It's a great bit, though. It's a good bit to rotate. But I don't think we're gonna do that.
So those will be rolling out very slowly. I don't even know. We'll probably load them back because I don't want to get them all done and then spend a day where we're putting in like 800, like 200. It's actually 200 images about, because I intend for like the gallery that's going to be set up. Maybe not the website, but the actual gallery let's link to. Like when we did all the Crystal Dynamics Tomb Raiders, I'm going to make 5 covers.
Okay. Yeah.
For each game. Like, episode 2 of Abnormal Mapping has 2 covers. It has the Swapper and it has Pokemon XY, because we talked about both games.
Yes.
Yeah. Just have... Because Boo gave me, like, a format to, like, split them horizontally or split them vertically, but I think it's just a bad aesthetic. I really want it to, like, be really clean.
Yeah. And it'll just all be in the one gallery. That makes sense.
Yeah. Because then you can, like, look at it and be like, man, look at all these fucking games they played. It's like, yeah, we've been doing this a long time.
We have been doing this a long time.
Because I was going through our list, and I was like, we've played some of the coolest shit in the world. And also, I think of the, like, modern era of normal mapping happening, like, 3 years ago. But I go back to, like, it starts in, like, episode, like, 70 or something. It's like, it was a long time ago at this point.
I think of the, oh, shit, we only play bangers now era starting in 2020.
Okay, interesting.
I don't know why, because we played bangers before, but that was like, what's the beginning of that? It was, what's that game called? The one that we did with Nora. Time Spinner.
Oh, Time Spinner? Yeah, yeah. I mean, we played Outer Wilds for episode 100. Like, that is...
It's like Time Spinner into Outer Wilds into Disco Elysium.
I really think it's like... If you like really put a gun in my head, I think it's like when we did Sonic Adventure 2 in episode 94. I think from there it's just been like fucking bangers. And that's like, that's not that early. That's like just slightly before Time Spinner. That's like 8 months before Time Spinner.
Yeah. And I think like there was always bangers, but I'm just looking through and I'm like, there was a point where I'm like, we stopped being so self-conscious about which games to pick and the games got better. And that's kind of around the era that I think of that happening.
Yeah.
But the year before we did do Sonic Adventure 2 and Killer 7. So it's like, damn. Gaming,
yeah, but Killer 7's right up against Super Mario Galaxy 2 and Chrono Trigger, so like it's sandwiched with mid.
Chrono Trigger is better than Super Mario Galaxy 2.
I don't think I agree with that, because I'd at the end of the day I'd rather jump around even if the game is mid than play like a better than mid RPG, but I still don't like it very much.
I don't even remember the context. So now I have that post going around that someone said. The Gusty God of Galaxy is like the greatest song ever composed in the history of music. And I was like, what?
It's not. It's not even the best song in Galaxy 2. It's Buoy Bass Galaxy.
I don't remember the name of the galaxy.
It's the one where like when you go under, because like, it's like above water, underwater. When you go underwater, it has a different version of the song that plays. And I think it's like so inventive and cool. I mean, it's doing like a Monkey Island Muse sort of thing, just with 2 tracks. But like, it's good. I like it.
I mean, I like when... Here's the actual thing. I feel like I used to like dynamic music a lot more than I do, and now it's in everything. I actually value when they're just a fucking song.
Yeah, I mean, I think it has to be done with a certain amount of care, right?
Yes.
When you play Wind Waker, I think Wind Waker has really good dynamic music.
When I play Wind Waker.
Are you saying if you maybe won't play Wind Waker?
What if I just didn't play Wimbledon? I probably will play Wimbledon. I guess it's the next one I have on the.
It's not even that long. Like, you might as well just play Wind Waker. After that, I don't. If you're like, I never get to fucking Twilight Princess or Skyward Sword, I'm not going to be put out about it.
Honestly. Oh, you're not going to. That one doesn't bother you that much.
No, it does not.
Yeah, that's weird. Yeah. I guess I should play Wind Waker. I do.
On your new Nintendo Switch, too. Don't do it there. It sucks there.
I'd probably just play the GameCube version in Dolphin, would be my guess.
Yeah, the GameCube emulation on Switch 2 seems like it might be pretty bad. Shocker of all shocks. Because they stopped making M2 duos.
I could play the Wii U version either emulated or just on my Wii U.
So the Wii U version has a bunch of quality of life features, but you can get those modded back into the Dolphin version. It will look better. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. The thing you want is fast sail, really.
It's fun. Yeah, that's the one thing. Oh my god, I would like to sail my boat a little faster.
I know the randomizer for the GameCube version has fast sail. I assume someone did that to like just the base game too. They had to have, right?
Well, I know that in Pokemon, when you take randomizer generators, you can just generate a thing that doesn't like you just turn off all the options and you just still get the, like randomizer feature set.
Yeah, okay, good.
So I would imagine it would be similar for Zelda. I haven't looked into it, but I know that's a thing with how randomizers work. But I guess it is weird that I haven't, because I like Zelda. When I play a Zelda, I like it. I just don't ever.
It would be really funny because you're gonna come in and be like, "This was the babiest game for babies. What happened?"
I mean,
and it's true. It's true, but it is really good.
Ocarina of Time's already the babiest game for babies.
The Forest Temple and the Water Temple alone. Forest Temple, I think, is harder than the Water Temple. I know that's not a popular opinion, but those two are like 10 times harder than anything in Wind Waker.
The Water Temple, at least the 3DS version, it's got like the you know, arrows. You can tell which floor I'm on.
Also, you can just turn off your boots at any time on the touch
screen. Yeah, so you don't have to go to the menu as much. But the Water Temple in Ocarina of Time is when I was like, finally, these dungeons are getting good. Yeah. I like a dungeon in a Zelda game.
Yeah, I think the adult dungeons are like where I want my difficulty. I think my favorite 3D Zelda dungeon is still the Snowpeak Temple in Majora's Mask. I think that one's sick as hell.
I wish Majora's Mask had more dungeon. It was very weird, but like because we did the episode of Majora's Mask, and I think it's quite a good episode with Crystal. But I remember it building up and expecting it to be more than it was. I think I might like Ocarina of Time more in my head when I think about going back, but I think it's just because Ocarina of Time got unfairly built up as like the cool one that does all the things Zelda doesn't.
I love that you've just like inverted yourself twice on like anti-populism.
But I just ended up with a normal opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, you ended up with the normiest opinion, but like going like reversing yourself around the sun 6 times. Here's the thing, I like playing Ocarina of Time more, but I love Majora's Mask vibes so much.
Majora's Mask vibes are incredible.
Yeah.
The actual thing about Majora's Mask is Shenmue ruined it. Is that Shenmue is a better game about being in a town on a schedule than Majora's Mask is.
If you had to go through a time loop, he'd be so bad at time loop, Ryo.
He's bad at the one time.
Yeah.
He's not very good at anything, Ryo. He's kind of just vibing.
He's good at getting sweaty. That's his one thing.
That's true.
He likes gacha games.
Well, he likes gachas. Like actual gachas.
Yeah,
not gacha games.
Yeah. Well, yeah, fair enough. Oh, they need to time skip Ryo, and he's just fucking making pulls on his phone.
60-year-old Ryo. And then what's her face from the end of Shenmue 2 is like, we're gonna deal with the stuff in the cave.
She's like, she's still like 17. She's magical. 17. Yeah.
She's like, we're gonna have to deal with whatever that was, and he's like, I have to pull on Honkai. Please go away.
Yeah. My Wuthering Waves wives need to get pulled.
But he's just completely affectless going, I'm pulling now on my gacha games. Yeah. Oh, Shenmue. God.
And then the voice actor's like, I got it when he gets the 5-star.
Yeah!
We deserve this. Shenmue 3 is still coming. It's delayed because I don't have it. I don't have that game in me. It's really long, the thing. It's longer than Shenmue 1 and 2, kind of like put together in some ways.
We were going to do it like relatively quickly, but it's been a rough year for you. So
yeah,
Shenmue 3
health stuff's been bad.
Basically, on the schedule for you can press the button, whatever. And I'll be ready to go.
I think that's one where I'll probably start it like 3 months before I intend to do it, so I can just like chip at it.
Yes. And I'll play it in a week.
Yeah. I also learned one thing about that game that I didn't know, but it makes sense, but makes me very tired.
Is it a like late game story thing?
No, it's all stamina based, and I didn't realize that.
Oh, you know how to survival system?
No.
He's in the fucking sticks now. That makes sense to me.
I hate stamina management as a mechanic.
I don't dislike stamina management.
I know you don't, because you're a sicko about clocks, and that, stamina is basically a clock.
Stamina is basically a clock.
Yeah, I hate clocks. This is known. Do we want to talk about our Game Club game? This turned into a fucking VoIP somehow.
Well, we're about to talk about some fucking clocks.
Are we? Are we?
Kind of. Finite enemies in an RPG a clock.
Ooh. I just feel like leveling up in this game is kind of de-emphasized. I mean, it's important, but it's not like important in the way it is in like a different game. A more traditional RPG.
You can clear the map, then you have to move on to the next thing, and then you have to clear the map again. And the answer is this game's too easy really for it to matter. And you just have so many resources that it's like, well, I guess...
The thing that they give you is infinite ammo boxes everywhere.
Yeah, so it's like, why did they even put ammo in this game? It's fucking weird.
They tried to answer this question with a third birthday. Unfortunately, only 6 people played it. I just happened to be one of them.
I'm very excited for the third birthday.
I'm going to be honest, having played third birthday first and then playing this, I feel like the leap to third birthday is not as extreme as people make it out to be.
I assume that's also a game about lock-on targeting guys and shooting them with assault rifles.
Yeah, there's, like, no magic because you're, like, jumping between guys, so you're just, like... Because Aya goes back in time and is inhabiting the body of soldiers, so she's, like... it's, like, got the portable ops thing. You're just, like... You're using soldiers, they're out of ammo, then you jump to another guy. You don't ever reload in that game. You just jump to a different guy.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Square Enix. Well, yeah. Okay. Well, let's get into it because we got some conversation to be had about this game.
Yeah. So our game club this month is Parasite Eve 2, the game by Square that came out for the PlayStation in 1999, directed by Kenichi Ohao. We played Parasite Eve 1 individually, like just on our own, not even like together, just years ago at this point for me.
And it definitely got to the point where it's like, maybe I played Parasite Eve 1 too long ago to know what's going on in this game. It ends up not connecting as much as I thought it would. But in the middle, I was like, there's a lot of details I don't remember, guys.
Do you remember Mitochondrial Eve?
Yes.
Then you're good. Don't worry about it.
But I was just like, didn't that game end with like her in the opera house and everything being really fucking weird?
Yeah, we never talk about that again.
Okay. Okay, never mind.
Would you like to tell us the plot of Resident
Evil? No! God damn it. Okay. There's so much plot, and it truly matters. Doesn't fucking matter. So, Ivory has moved from the New York Police City Department, NYPD, to a FBI team called MIST, Mitochondrial Investigation and Suppression Team, who are...
Stars. Have you heard of Stars?
Hey, okay. You know, let's back out of continuity here. This game is directed by Kenichi Awao, the director, the writer, scenario writer, and the, like, number two to Mikami on Resident Evil.
You can
Mikami ends up, like, winning, but he is, like, an important part of that influence. Yeah. And brought a lot of his ideas for his Resident Evil 2 story to this game. You can tell. Because, so it's about Stars dealing with an outbreak of fucking zombies.
Yeah.
Because the mitochondria, like, moved across the to the west, and they followed them out there, and they've been suppressing them. And this game is ultimately about Aya going to the town of Dryfield, Nevada, where there's an Area 51 style location that has been doing a bunch of experiments with neo-mitochondrial creatures, which have had the, like, mitochondria injected in them to become, like, pure evolutionary forms of humanity that will force us to the next phase of evolution. The plot mostly revolves around Aya interacting with a couple one member of the town in the guy that sells the guns, Douglas, with the dog, and he's like your homie, and then interactions with Kyle Madigan, who is a private investigator who's always acting shady and obviously working for the bad guys, but also basically imagine the most sourceless Ada Wong that you can imagine, and that's kind of who Kyle Madigan is.
Remember when in Resident Evil 3, Jill got an Ada Wong of Carlos? That's this guy, basically.
This guy makes Carlos look like he has sores.
Would it horrify you to realize that Kyle Madigan goes on to be in the third birthday?
Why? For what purpose, Master Chief? Kyle Madigan, who cares?
Well, Kyle Madigan and Eve are major characters in the third birthday.
Okay, yeah. So, and the discovery is that as part of this, she keeps getting visions to, like, young Aya in the facility, and you're like, is this about to reveal her secret backstory? But no, it's actually visions of the girl she's kind of psychically connected to, because it turns out the only real connection to the first game that matters isn't the lore stuff with, like, her and her sister and Eve. None of fucking who gives a shit. It is they took her cells and used her cells to, like, fast forward this research that they're doing.
Yeah, they made a clone. They made a clone of Aya.
And she's called Eve, obviously. No relation, but also extremely related biologically, but also relation.
Yeah.
And they've been, like, they've trapped her in this facility and made her, like, pure survival instinct. And
yeah, she's basically the elfin lead girl.
Yes. And they've put, like, a helmet on her that amplifies all her emotions, and she's the one controlling all the ANMCs that have been fighting you as, like, a self-preservation instinct. So you go to save her, and then number nine, who is the like, other hunter that you fought through the game, is trying to get her for the plan. The plan is as generic as they come. The bad guys want to use the ANMCs to, like, force the evolution of humanity, and Eve is like, but they're weird, gross guys that eat everyone, and so you stop them. And you defeat number nine.
But he reveals that the ANMCs are actually people who volunteered to be the next step of evolution. It just didn't work for them.
It did work. They're like, oh, it's well,
yeah, but
they're
like, they lost their human. They lost their, like, sentience, right?
Yes. It's this game is weirdly sourceless in a way that I find fascinating.
I find it deeply charming.
I find it charming, but I find it fascinating in the oeuvre of the Square Enix late 90s, like, PS1 games.
The vibe it has to me, and this is, like, I haven't played, like, Resident Evil Outbreak and stuff. I feel like these probably have a similar vibe. It's like, you had, like, a really popular anime or, like, an OVA, and then they make the sequel too late.
Yes.
And, like, the team's broken up, it's kind of different ideas, and, like, the vibe, the energy is not there anymore, but you're, like, trying to recapture the glory, and you're just like, nah. And that's what the story feels like. The gameplay is, like, I have a whole other opinion about the gameplay, because I think this game is, like, really excellent, but the vibe on the story is just like, oh, you just kind of, like, didn't have anything else, and you just kind of did it again, but it's worse now.
MD Geist 2.
But it does have two-thirds in a cutaway to the fucking Oval Office, so it can't be all that bad.
I screamed. Yeah, so the ultimate plot is that the MIST team has been a false flag FBI team, and all of their, like, mitochondrial hunts have been sending data back to this lab to create the evolution of humanity, and you stop them. That's kind of it. Like, there's a bunch of details, but you do just, like, stop
also,
them.
Also, Kyle's not actually a traitor.
No, he is, but he just, like, got horny for you and then decided
well,
to
yeah, he was a traitor, but it actually seems like...
But he's also the guy, he's also a fucking Revolver Ocelot.
Yeah, I was gonna say, he has a Revolver Ocelot plan, and he basically was kind of up to him to decide what he wanted to do, and he decided he wanted to be with Aya because she's hot, which, you know, fair enough, I guess. They did give Aya a fatter ass in this game. I thought it was very funny. Fucking mom jeans. I'm like, oh, she's got like a dump truck now. Why? I mean, like 90s version of dump truck, so like not really, but like enough that I noticed.
I like the bit where you go to the mirror and she's like, I still look like I'm in my 20s. The mitochondria keeps me hot and young. And then you go see how age she is. And I'm like, she's 28. Like you didn't actually need to justify this with fucking supernatural things. She's only 28 in normal years. Like, what the fuck are you talking about, guys? Well, you didn't need to put that in here. You gotta save it. This one at least for the third birthday when it has been 30 years.
Birthday, she gets her like fucking sexy nurse outfit that gets torn apart as she takes damage.
But okay, but she's quantum leaping all over the place,
and she's like travel. She's like way thinner in that because anime aesthetics have really taken hold. Nomura's not around for third birthday in the same way.
Anime girls have changed since the 90s. Yeah. But yeah, the ultimate conclusion is you stop them. The conspiracy is revealed, but then they're like the game kind of like gives up and tries to pretend it is a mystery. They're like, whoever owned this mysterious corporation was never revealed and the truth never came out. And I'm like, well, I don't care either, so I guess whatever. But that's kind of where it all goes. Like, the government covers it all up and...
With an orbital laser, for the record.
The government covers it up with an orbital laser. The president is like, well, we kind of got away with all that. And they're like, yep, that was lucky. What a near miss that was. Luckily, nothing that happened in this game mattered. You're like, okay, well, never mind. And the true ending reveal is not any of the mystery stuff getting tied up. It is that fucking Kyle comes back... in September 2001.
Even though one of his legs was blown off.
Yes, he's fine now.
It's September 1st, 2021 in New York City.
2011, not 2021. 2001. Sorry,
2001, yes. September 1st, 2001.
Ten days before. I'm like, kidding. What if they just put September 11th? What if they just did it? How funny that would have been.
What if Aya Brea helps either cause or save the world from 9/11?
It's true. God. The part at the end, this is just a story thing, but like the mitochondria Eve shows up as a boss fight, like completely pointlessly, as no reason other than I guess the DNA was there.
Yeah, it's like, otherwise we don't really have a good boss, so here's a weird moth creature.
But it's like, it's not about Eve. This game's not about Eve like that. This game's like, it's weird. What a weird thing, story-wise. But yeah, so my ultimate reaction to it was, the game is so... I like the story. I find it charming. I love the cutaway to the Oval Office.
I like the town. I like hanging around the town. I think that's what's really
I like
cool.
The town. I think the opening has like a shot that's like one of the best shots in a Square Enix PS1 game, just straight up.
Which one are you talking about?
You get to the Die Hard Tower.
Yeah.
And there's a single long tracking shot that's like manually timed to your walking.
Oh, yeah, where you're approaching the building? Yes, it's so fucking good.
And there's a single
one. There's some
of
this in Final Fantasy VIII, but like, they kind of drop it as an aesthetic because they move out of pre-render backgrounds soon after this.
It's such a cool thing. I'm like, man, they should never have given up pre-render backgrounds. Yeah. And you get up the tower, and there's like incredible reflections that just look better than any reflection now, like without ray tracing. But they did on the PS1, one of those, just pre-rendered stuff.
There's one of those in like deep in the Neo Arc, which is like the big underground lab. There's like one area where you're going through like a green space, and there's just like a half foot big puddle that exists in one level, like the water sitting on top of the pre-rendered background to like have like water physics on it. And I was like, this is showing off. There's no reason for this to be here. This is like when you play Resident Evil remake and there's just the big shark tank area, and you're like, this just looks good. You just put this in here to look fucking good.
Yeah. And so the game's got a lot of that. It's got a lot of, like, this is the, you know, this is the late 90s, early 2000, 99 in Japan, 2000.
Yeah, there's a lot
America.
Of stuff here I feel like is, like, an early run at, like, what Resident Evil Remake does in terms of, like, just showing off.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a really impressive looking game.
Yeah.
But the vibes are so... This game made me appreciate there is a reason I like Square games, and this game doesn't really have any of it, which is not to say this game's bad, but, like, this is what I meant by sources. Like, there's the big attack at the end of the game, well, the troops come in, right? And they start shooting guys, and it's, like, realistic. And I'm like, the game before this had, like, a cut from the moon to the opera, and there was, like, a sense of fucking wonder about it all. And often yes. It was for the same generic ideas. But it made me think of, like, this is coming out. I mean, fucking Racing Lagoon is particularly on its bullshit one of these, but Square yeah. games just have, like, a artiness to them in the 90s that is just not yeah. present here.
No. Even, like, Einhander's dripping with the shit, right?
Yeah, like, that. There's, and you can also read it as, like, pretension, right? I'm not saying it's entirely always a positive, like, but I do like it. It made me miss it. This game doesn't have the belief that it's, like, going for something operatic and ridiculous in the way, like, Chrono Cross does.
No. Chrono Cross is, like, so full of this, and it's, like, I think it, like, earns it really well, but it is full of this.
But, like, that's just, like, all over the Square games, and this is, like, oh, this is, they clearly got a guy that does not work here to do this. This is so by the book. Okay, we have the military guys coming in, and then they're gonna, like, expose the president.
This feels so much more informed by, like, where TV is at, like, X-Files, yes. Millennium, like, those kind of, like, you know, paranormal procedural shows. It's like, go to the office tower, do a police action, go to the dusty town, find a weird thing, go to the lab under the lab.
This game,
really bold of them to have the lab take up the entire back half of the game.
I didn't know how long the game was, and also when I was finishing it, stuff at home has been really bad, so I was being interrupted, like, every half an hour going through this lab that never ended, that had four labs inside of it, and also an entire Noah's Ark. I was like, what is happening? This game never ends, because you go to the lab and it's on the second disc, and, like, that means there's either 8 hours left or 90 minutes, and it's all video.
Yeah,
and it could have been either one. It was the former. It was the former. There's not, like, a lot of F&B in this game.
Yeah.
But the game is too long. There's a reason Resident Evil 2 is 3.5 hours long.
One of the greatest games ever made, honestly.
It just doesn't have this is more gameplay stuff, but, like, there is a fit and finish missing to this game. It's a very loose game. The puzzles are a little awkward. It just doesn't have,
Some of the puzzles, like, some of the puzzles are really nice, and some of the puzzles are just, like, hot bullshit. You're like, why did you allow this in the game?
And so it just, like, doesn't have the level of, like, polish that the Resident Evil games have. It's a very Resident Evil game. It's basically a Resident Evil game, because it's, like, tank controls, hold R1 to targets, blah, blah, blah.
I love that. I think all the mechanics of that stuff are good. I think the, like, coming in and out of combat feels a lot clunkier, given that it's much more Resident Evil, but I don't hate it, you know? Mm-hmm. I do love, like, when you go into a map, it's nice because there's so many blind corners. You know that there's enemies because of the way it goes into combat, right?
Yes.
So you never get quite surprised by it. I mean, you might be surprised, but you're surprised by the combat, like, noise coming up, like the freeze frame. And then I do, like, at the end of every combat, I reloads our gun. I think that's sick. Like, just a signifier of, like, you can't see them, but I promise there's no more enemies here. Put the gun away.
It's pretty good. And you get a little XP reward, and you're like, yeah, let's go.
Because there's some places, like, there's the big, like, dirt path around the big tower in the town, where, like, I fought all the guys I saw, and then she hadn't put her gun away yet. And I'm like, shit, that means there's someone else here. And I'd, like, run around to find where they were.
But that they can, like, keep respawning, because you got to fucking... It turns out there's a bit... This is kind of what I mean about the lack of fit and finish, is the thing you're talking about. You hit the button to open the gate, right?
Yeah, and then you have to rush over to the gate, and you get ambushed on your way there.
You get ambushed on the way there, but the specific way they spawn in is really awkward, in that the enemy is literally not there, like, as a presence on the map in the digital files of the video game until you hit a certain trigger, which is, if you knew it was there, you would be able to shoot it faster, but there's no one there to aim at, because it hasn't been spawned in yet. And so it makes, like... Okay, when do I, like, shoot? Because I can't... If I shoot my, like, super, you know, flamethrower brain blast.
Oh, you mean the weapon that solves every problem?
Yeah, but the enemy's not spawned in yet. And then if I wait for the enemy, if I go close enough to the spawn trigger, then I get hit because the time it takes to hit the spell. And so it's just stuff like that. It's just a little.
I just got hit and then ran into the gate and then had to fight 800 of those guys because that's when they spawn all of them.
And then that's the so at some point, fairly early on, you realize, wait a second. I can tank literally everything in this game, and they will just give me the resources to deal with it by, like, a million miles.
Yeah, I literally have a heal. It's not even that expensive.
I have an infinite heal, and I get MP back at the end of every fight, and I have infinite ammo, basically, because I can always go back to my recharge point and recharge my ammo. So at some point pretty early on, you realize, wait a minute a second, the survival part of survival horror doesn't exist. I can just kind of, like, fight guys sloppily. And it's very good when you realize that, because this is absolutely not, under any circumstances, a no-hit, knife-only game. I mean, you technically can. Theoretically could, but nah.
It's so clearly in the, like, I mid-period Resident Evil mode to me of, like, we already did the spooky thing. I mean, I don't think Parasite Eve is that much of this sort of game, but I mean, it's the vibe of, like, now we're just going to give you 16 guns and scopes and, like, tactical vests, and you're going to go in, you're going to fight, you're going to clear out an entire town full of monsters and go underneath the town, there's even more monsters, you're going to shoot every motherfucking one of those, and you're just going to blow them all away. It's like, truly, you go into a room and there's, like, six guys, and you just, like, are unloading with your machine gun for a good, like, minute and a half, and I'm like, there's no survival horror here. There's none of that.
No, you just have, like, a million guns immediately, and you shoot them all.
Yeah. And they're not even, like, the best solution. The best solution is to go fireball.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Is, like, so the thing I actually really liked about this game is I like its magic system, but I kind of wish
it's
that was...
It's so fucking cool. I wish there was more of it.
I wish the game was much more of, like, a... RPG, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, the thing I wish is there was more stuff about Eve being... Or, like, Aya being, like... also a mitochondrial Eve, and like she's developing all these monstrous powers that you then invest in and like are more interesting than what is in the game, because it's only 12 spells, and I didn't even unlock all of them, and because I didn't fuck with the electricity at all. It was like fireballs and healing basically, and like the buff.
Yes, I mean the gun buff is real useful.
Yes,
because it's just like, can I have a thing that kills things pretty quickly? And they're like, yeah, sure, go nuts.
Yeah, you mean the fireball? I was like, well, what if something other than the fireball? What if two things that kill things really quickly?
But like the thing I like about it is I like pausing and then going into like target mode, and using all my spells in different ways, and I'm like, this could have been the whole battle system. You could have built like a slower, more deliberate game. Like it would play to the square strength more. That's when I feel the like RPG asserting itself.
Well, yeah, the thing is, like, playing, like, looking at how the spells work and the way, just, like, her animations and everything, like, this is a game that assumed Final Fantasy VIII would be a huge success to me.
I mean, like, in my heart.
Like, I know, but, like, the vibe is just, like, because Final Fantasy VIII has, like, some action elements. Like, there's the Squall's trigger, and there's, like, Zell's limit breaks and stuff. But then, like, it's also about, like, the active drawing and using of magic and the way the magic is really emphasized. And something about the way Aya, like, moves and casts magic, partially because it's, like, Nomura realism designs and, like, a modern setting, just reeks of Final Fantasy VIII to me. In a way that I find very appealing as a huge fan of Final Fantasy VIII, my favorite game
of
all time.
The main villain has a gunblade.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Yeah. And so I am running around casting magic, like just fucking shooting fireballs and shotguns. I'm like, this is sick. It's a shame that like never did anything with this. I'm like, should I play Dino Crisis? I'm like, that's not going to have the sauce. I know it won't have the sauce.
I mean, it'll be, if you want like a more polished Capcom action game, it'll have that sauce. But I know that like, I assume I'd like Dino Crisis a lot more than you.
Yeah, probably. It's not like I go on and play the third birthday. I already did that one. And it's not that good. Like, I like it more than most people, but it's not that good.
The ways in which the third birthday sounds stupid is the thing that Parasite Eve 2 doesn't have by being a non-Square guy. Because this is what I mean about, like, what is the fucking Square Enix source? And it doesn't have to be a positive. I don't mean this as, like, a pure qualitative thing. It is just an identifiable vibe. And the vibe is, they got the Resident Evil guy, and it's, like, the fucking military, and we're covering it up with the orbital laser, and we want to do this with the guy fell in love with her, and he's betraying you, and it's all very straight, played straight, normal stuff. third birthday. Oh, they got the fucking Square Enix guys to do this. And she's traveling back through time, through the memories of the fucking bullshit machine. To
she's inhabiting the bodies of soldiers fighting, like, big goop monsters.
Yeah, to learn about the secret of whatever the fuck. And I'm like, ah, this is... I see that they've...
Also, it's like a run-based PSP game about, like, going through, like, areas over and over again to get BP to buy new guns and stuff.
It's Tajima Tabata Strikes Again. He's never made a game that doesn't feel like an alien described an RPG to someone once and had to recreate it from memory.
It's really magic, honestly. And I don't like most of his games that much, but it's really magic.
I mean, I love Final Fantasy 15. Like, it works in his favor sometimes.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That one is, like, the best. That's also, like, the most normal one, also.
Yeah, but, like, you look at how you level up in that game and the way it affects, like, the XP curve.
I've played that game twice, and I'm still not sure how you level up that game sometimes.
I mean, you level up by going to the
I know.
Thing, but like, but the curve of unlocks.
What am I emphasizing here? Like, what are we doing? Like, come on now.
Yeah. Did you just think that RPGs should be nonsense? Yeah. Which is fair enough. Because, like, you go to Crisis Core and you're like, I think Crisis Core is a bad game for many reasons. But one of them is that, like, the remake fixed the combat, quote-unquote, in that it made the combat a lot better, but it doesn't do anything to the fact that the numbers in the RPG scaling of the game mean that, like, you're either doing zero damage or everyone dies in one hit, and thus the entire combat system is fucking pointless.
Yeah, my enduring memory of playing that on PSP, I've not played the remake.
Was it casting Thundara 1,000 times?
Dark Thundaga over and over and over again, yes.
Yes! And I'm like, ah, oh, that is the sign.
It's like just constant slot machine trying to get my fucking Thundaga on, yes.
Yeah. Parasite Eve 2 doesn't have anything like that. For good or ill, this is a weirdly normal game for Square.
Well, yeah, the part where you go, one of the major UI elements of Crisis Core is a constant Materia slot machine going at all times. What happened here?
Whereas Parasite Eve 2 is like, you aim the gun and you fire it.
Right? Yeah, like, it's very staid, yes.
It's weird to say, because I feel like this game also has a reputation for, oh, it goes crazy in the plot, but it's just different. It's different in vibes. You know it when you play it.
Parasite Eve 1 is, like, kind of the slightly horror OVA, and this is, like, the military OVA. It has horror stuff, but it's really more of a military OVA.
Yes. And it's got a little, it's not, like, completely energy-less. Like I said, the cutaway to the present, fucking fantastic.
Yeah. But it's shoddy in a way that I find, like, interesting and charming.
Yes.
It's like, why is number 9, like, the major villain? Why do I care about this guy? He's, like, barely a guy, and he looks stupider every time you see him with his weird bulgy eyes and stuff. Goofy guy.
The ad to number 9 shows up, and he's like, I'm just like you. I'm a hunter. And you're like, okay, so this guy's the rival character. You're going to have multiple fights with him, and there's going to be some kind of poignant reveal at the end of the game. No! He's a fucking freak loser, and he gets eaten by the big goop monster. Like, what?
Yeah, he's like a giant Voldo gorilla guy, and every time you see him, he loses more of his mask, but it just exposes his weird, like, no eyelid face, and he's a freak. I hate him.
I'm like, what the fuck happened to Steiner from Final Fantasy IX?
That's exactly the vibe of his face. God Christ.
Why does he look like Steiner? What happened to you, man? They put you in a freak suit. But, like, in the rhythm of the structure of the genre, you would expect him to be some kind of poignant rival. He would die at the end and be like, you and I are the same, you know, whatever. That kind of bullshit. Metal Gear.
Mitochondrial Adam.
Right, exactly. There's so many generic ways. No, he's just a loser villain who sucks and gets killed. Yeah. That's the difference in identity of Parasite Eve 2 to me. Is that, like, why? Okay, sure.
Yeah.
I don't find the shoddiness of the story particularly, like, bad. It just is a different kind of charming vibe that is much more, like you say, a X-Files... not an X-Files, but, like, one of the many fake X-Files that was on TV in 1999. Absolutely.
Yeah. Something in the water back then.
Yeah.
I abraded 9/11.
I did watch the opening of The Third Birthday, and I was like...
Oh.
They... What?
Incoherent.
The fuck happened to New York?
Incoherent, yes.
Because that game, I was like, let's just see. I finished Parasite Eve 2. I wonder where The Third Birthday picks up. And then the opening of the game was like, first of all, Cloverfield hit the Square Enix office like a fucking nuclear bomb, apparently.
Yes. Because
it's just Cloverfield.
Yeah.
And second of all, New York is just destroyed by giant fucking plants that come out the ground and kill everything immediately.
You and your team are like in a little like Hope S. Thyme end of the world enclave, and then she's got to go back and like undo the time, like the thing that happened.
I assume she has to go back in time to remake New York so it doesn't get fucking blown up.
Yeah, basically.
But like, and then and it takes the Statue of Liberty and like holds it weirdly, and I'm like, didn't that also get blown up in Parasite Eve 1? Did they rebuild it? Did they rebuild the Statue of Liberty? This is like sure, when Metal Gear Rising starts referencing 9/11, and you're like, but that was Arsenal Gear in this game. It's got a different. We're in alternate history. You can't reference 9/11 in Metal Gear. We already had fake 9/11.
I bet Arsenal Gear would have killed way more people than an actual 9/11 did.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
It fucking, like, flattened half of New York.
Yeah.
I'm still kind of disappointed that the Metal Gear HD remasters never put back in all the stuff they took out for 9/11.
Yeah. They're never going
to
do that.
I wanted to see the Arsenal... I mean, you can see the, like, versions of it on... Like, people know about the Arsenal Gear cutscene, but they should have just put it back in.
Yeah. Do we have that much else to say about Parasite Eve 2? I know it's kind of a short one, but, you know.
The boss fights are so fucking weird.
They are weird.
The monsters are just huge in this game.
Yeah, here's a giant guy and you're on, like, a raised platform. They're like Sonic Adventure bosses. You know the kind of talking
about? Yes, they're the like circular arena. Yes.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, the biohazard perfect life form was draft bomb, and the second draft was Shadow the Hedgehog. And
you're
like,
yeah.
Aya, the Black Doom are coming!
Yeah, Aya's just running around an arena, like, shooting at a giant guy in the center of the arena and dodging his slow-ass attacks.
It's very strange.
Yeah.
Because, like, Resident Evil bosses are not this.
They're
usually a little bigger than you, but they're, like, on a par that allows for like movement to be interesting.
Well, yeah. The thing I think about is like Tyrant, like original ass final boss Resident Evil, where you're like running around the lab, avoiding its big claw attacks. You get one magnum shot off, and then you got to run away from it again.
And that's like the first enemy you run into is like that. It's not as like powerful as Tyrant, but like that's kind of the scale we start at, and it just gets bigger and bigger. And like getting bigger doesn't actually make the enemies more interesting. In fact, I don't know why I'm fighting the final boss of Kingdom Hearts 1 in the middle of this lab, but like it just has that kind of vibe, right? Just like big, giant, fleshy monstrosities that you just shoot a million times till they die.
Yeah.
I just thought the vibe of the enemies was kind of funny.
Yeah, because other than that, it's mostly like dog guys, right?
Yeah. Oh, those dog guys that like jump at you and you've got to kind of sidestep them are really annoying. Those guys are really annoying. But if you can get them with just hit them with the fireball, they just fucking die.
Yeah. So, no, fireball's OP for pretty much the entire game.
Yeah. It's very strange because the game is really hard and really easy at the same time in that they clearly realized the game doesn't actually have the enemy design and precision control of Resident Evil to, like, say, allow the knife-only run to work in that Resident Evil designed in such a way where you can just not get hit, right? You can just be good at the game and win. But here they're like, oh, that's not going to happen. This game's kind of too annoying. But then they give you so many resources, it's like, okay, I'll just get hit 20 times and it won't matter. I'll just heal myself. It's fine. And that once you realize that, the game becomes basically very easy through to the end.
I don't think I have that much else.
Yeah, the puzzles, you know, you go move the thing back and forth as you go through the Neo Arc forest, and I'm like, these puzzles don't have it like the Spencer Mansion. Much more of a combat game.
Yeah, and there's like some puzzles, like the Moon Gate puzzle and the getting the holy water, which are just like, I looked those up. Fuck this, I'm not doing this.
Yeah, I mean, I had a guide around because and then the guy was like, if you don't press the door twice, you won't get the black card that makes the back stretch of the game much easier. And I'm like, fucking, did aliens make this? What the I didn't press twice because I briefly said the door's locked, and that was just my signal to turn around and not press X on it again.
Yeah.
But no, you press X on it again, you get a different card and you unlock more stuff, and it's there's a lot of stuff like that.
Yes.
I ultimately thought, like, the tanker mission, right, the Die Hard thing was, like, kind of the best part of the game in terms of just, like, pure... Like, that one's got, like, one puzzle that's kind of annoying with the... You gotta figure out the musical notes on the bridge to figure out the code.
Yeah.
And then it's got a couple keys that you use back and forth to recognize, like, oh, there's this, open that door. Got a few locked doors and shortcuts. But it's very compacted and you can hold it all in your head. Yeah. I feel like once you get to the main body of the game, because it's bigger, it often feels smaller and that the environment's bigger, but they lock you in to a single, like, linear path more because the story has to
extremely
happen.
Yeah, extremely like that. So I think I like the town section the most because I just think the vibe is really good.
The vibe is very strong. But then you never get, like, the police station, right? You never get the, like, I'm in this space, and I'm going back and forth, and I'm understanding.
Oh, they do not have the sauce to make a thing like the police station.
It's very strange that, like, they've done the modeling. There's the bit where you go up to the top of the town, and then, like, it shows a CG shot of the whole town, and it's just all the areas that are just, like...
Yeah.
It's clear that, like, whatever tools they're using to make the CG, they have the whole town modeled, and they just, like, photograph them from different angles for the backgrounds.
Yeah.
And they use that really well for, like, some wide shots.
Yeah.
But there's never a bit where, like... So, there's one bit early on where you have to get... you have to get a key from out of a drain. Like, it's fucking Monkey Island.
Yeah.
And you talk to him, and he's like, oh, go to the bar. And I go to the bar, and the bar's locked. And so I'm like, oh, if I should go around to the front of the... Because the bar's got a front door as well, and that's going to be on the side, and I go there. And the front door is also locked. I'm like, what the fuck am I meant to do? I looked it up. Turns out, when I went to the top of the water tower, I was meant to climb up a thing that I didn't realize was the ladder to find...
I did do that. I got that part. I had to look up the magnet itself, because I didn't know where the magnet was.
The magnet's just in the...
Yeah, but I didn't. I examined a thing next to the fridge and didn't examine the fridge.
Oh, you didn't realize you
magnet.
Hadn't pressed the fridge? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. But I invented a cooler puzzle. For, oh, I have to go around to the front of the store and then no, you just to use the magnet and walk back immediately is like the most baby thing. There's no real like spatial relation. Like this key opens this door, which then now I can do this, which is this thing. Resident Evil. It just is too focused in every.
Yes.
Like, so that means the puzzles have to be much more like, how do I get around this one car? And this one, they're much more like single room puzzles. There's not really the spatial connectivity that makes the genre sing in the way that I really like, because the game has too much. You gotta hear more bullshit about number 9, man. You gotta learn about the soldiers.
I do not. I do like when all the soldiers roll in and all of them are like, oh, Aya, we're here to protect you. Here's all the ammo we have. I think that vibe is very good. It's very silly to me.
Well, the part where suddenly all the military show up, but they're just like, nice. Just
yeah, they just listen to you whenever. Because there's a whole bit where they're given orders to pull away, like, clearly this place is getting nuked. And they're like, we're going to stick around, ma'am. We got all the ammo. We loaded up Kyle in the back of the truck. It'll be fine.
I like the present... has to like orders everyone get news and like they'll be buried in Arlington as hero of the nation, and I don't think a single person dies. Even the dog makes it through that one. Yeah. World's least effective orbital laser in the history of fiction.
Number 9 is the only person who dies. That and like I guess Mitochondrial Eve 2.
Yeah, but not from the orbital laser.
No, not from the orbital laser.
It has the fucking Resident Evil 2 nuke, like,
yeah,
you know, FMV, but then like everyone's like, oh, I was fine. I kind of survived the explosion. It was no big deal to me. That's the level the Parasite Eve 2 operates on.
Yeah.
Anyway, those are all the beats I wanted to hit. We can move on now. I didn't mean to keep dragging us back.
So we'll hit some music and then we'll come back with some questions. Thank you. like to send questions, you can send them to abnormalmappingpodcast@gmail.com. Our first one's from Aiden. You're beating every N64 game, and you mean all of them. The twist is, the next game you play is randomly selected, so you have no clue what's coming next. This is the journey to beating every N64 game. How long would you last in Tab's N64 Challenge? If you don't know, The Beast, I don't remember what the numbers are at the end. If you just look, The Beast, or N64. Yeah, he has been playing every N64 game for years now. In random order, all of them, both Japanese and American, like basically everyone. Like streaming it, and then there's edited videos on YouTube. That's a great way to like watch something with lunch. I've watched many of them. Yes. He's been delayed for weeks trying to get the Ogre Battle 64 video edited, because apparently it's like incredibly long, because the quest is he plays all of Ogre Battle 64.
Oh, well, he is a true person of Lord Decalibur.
Do you think you'd make it to the end, or would you tap out on one of the countless number of mediocre sports games or horse racing games it takes dozens of hours to complete?
I'd tap out during one of the good games.
I would not tap out during one of the good games, but I would not be able to do this, no.
I'm just saying that, like, I would not be doing this. This is antithetical to...
Is there another console's library you'd have an easier, more enjoyable time completing? The Virtual Boy.
Yeah, like, it has to be something tiny. Because, like, you say, like, my favorite console libraries, they all have to, like... They were too successful. Like, you can't say PS2 because that's got 1%.
I'm going to slap down the PlayStation and then 6 lifetimes to complete those.
And then, but they're like 8,000 MLB games, right? Like, it's just, you remember the Capcom Square Namco Classics.
His criterion for completing sports games is usually to complete an entire season or whatever the big season mode is. Yeah.
That makes sense. That's how I would do it as well.
Yeah. Every racing game, he does, like, all the circuits. Like, he gets all the trophies, and that's when it's done. You know, that sort of stuff.
What a ridiculous challenge.
Yeah. The problem is that every platform has a lot of bad games on it. So I don't think I'd ever want... Like, if you put a gun in my head, you got to do one of them. What console do you want to spend the rest of your life, like, chipping away at? I think my answer would probably be, like, PC Engine. But, like, there's so many games I can't understand because they're all in Japanese. So, like, it's actually, like, really hard to do. And the Japanese games he's playing, a lot of the N64 ones have fan translations. He has people in the chat who can read Japanese. He's muddling through. I assume I wouldn't have those kind of materials. Also, the PC Engine is just less understood, so it's just harder to do. But it is the one I'm most interested in. Every time I look at the PC Engine, I'm like, this thing's fucking crazy.
Yeah, but like in the let's imagine the fantasy world where all the like you can just understand Japanese, like you remove that barrier. Now you have the opposite problem of there are probably like 1,100 million self-published PC Engine trash ROG nonsense games, right?
No, it's not like PC 98 or anything. Like this is like actual console, but there are a lot of anime games. Yeah, but like I feel this way. Like the Saturn would be high on my list. Saturn's got the same problem.
Saturn's
a lot of games
one
are Japanese. But do you want to play like visual novels and bad RPGs based on popular anime of the era? And it's like, no, not really.
I mean, kinda, but not that
not
much.
Really.
You know?
Yeah, do you want to replay the plot of the first season of this anime as like a fucking visual novel? There's no changes, you just do it again? It's like, no.
No.
There's a lot of games that are just that.
I'm good, thank you.
Do you want to play the first season of Imaginate Rayearth, but it's like a Dragon Quest clone, but it's sauceless? That's the SNES Rayearth game. The Saturn one's apparently much better.
I'm good.
Yeah. This is the problem with all these platforms. There's bad games on everything. I think the bad games of that era are a little more charming, but only because, like, my predilections, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because the thing I don't want to do is, like, pick the DS, even though I like the DS, and then I've got to play fucking Imagine Babies, like, 6 times, right?
Well, that's the thing, is that, like, when people say, like, the PS2 is the best library ever, the amount of good games there is, like, what, 3% at most?
Yeah. Yeah.
Compared to the deluge of slop that was released for the PS2 because it was the biggest thing in the world.
Yeah, all the slop that was released of the era, all of the like downgraded Wii ports that it got in its waning years.
It just every console has too much like that. The ratio is too off. I would never want to complete a console in that way.
Yeah, which is why I said Virtual Boy. In and out, done.
In and out. Yep.
The Casio Loopy, finish that in like a fucking afternoon.
Yeah, like you can make a coward's answer, right? Like easy, but yeah, for sure.
The one that sounds like a coward's answer, but I think would be genuinely laborious, is the Wii U. You don't want to pick that one.
Oh, you don't want to pick that one.
Because, like, there aren't that many games, right? Games? But it's well, I don't know, because no one's done this project with a thing with a download store. But the thing is, most of what you're playing on the Wii U is, like, fucking terrible ports of, like, 360 and PS3 games. Like, you might as well just die now.
Jigsaw, I want to play a game. You can go free. Oh, but it's
Arkham City.
You have to complete Arkham City on the Wii U. All of it.
Armored Edition, excuse you, it had a name.
Ninja Gaiden 3, Razor's Edge.
Yeah, exactly. It's
like, the Mass Effect 3 Wii U port. Play it now.
I'll take the trap that rips my jaw off, actually.
Hoffman's just sitting there playing Mass Effect 3 for the Wii U.
Oh, fuck. That's like one of the better ones you could pick, is the worst part.
What are the other Wii U ports?
There's so many of them. You know what you should play? Just because I think it'd be funny for you to report back. You should play the fucking Wii Dead Rising game.
No.
Okay, fair enough.
I know too much about it. It's boring. Like, there's nothing interesting there. It's just Resident Evil 4, but they put it in the Dead Rising, like, mall for no reason.
Yeah. Sounds interesting.
No!
I mean, not really, but...
No, it's not interesting! I just said the sentence that contains every interesting fact about it. I've seen gameplay of it. I will not learn more by spending hours playing it.
All right, you fucking coward.
Play Devil's Third or you won't get out of the fucking trap.
Oh. No, I'm good.
I didn't even answer that one.
Yeah, God. Stupid. Eric writes in, at the beginning of the last episode, you were talking about high density versus low density gaming, and came up with examples of games you describe in those terms will compliment you in derogatory ways, except for using high density as a derogatory label. Is there any game out there you would say is high density in a bad way? I feel this way about RTS games.
I mean, that's not derogatory though. That's just like, we aren't built for RTS games.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I mean, that's true of, like, whatever. Like, you know, casual clickers have their place. I don't like them, but, you know, people enjoy them. The same way with RTS, or like, what do I want? Tower Defense. Fucking hate it as a genre, but, like, people love that shit.
I'll play Tower Defense. I don't hate Tower Defense.
Oh, I hate it. I hate it so much.
You hate it?
Yeah.
You can't just enjoy a little bit of Tower Defense?
No,
you set down
I cannot.
Some towers, you beat a few waves.
No. Even Plants vs. Zombies, I'm like, no, this isn't it.
You're too good for just to put some towers down and kill
some
guys.
It's not that I'm too good with it. It's like the constant feeling of tension of, like, managing resources just makes... I don't like that, and I don't value that in a video game. I find it frustrating and, like, stressful.
Like, 95% of video games are about the constant tension of managing resources in some way.
Yeah, I cheat through a lot of video games.
That's, like, most of game design, is that sentence.
I like jumping on guys and, like, moving through spaces. That's, like, the things I value.
Okay, I guess that
using
is
keys
different.
To open doors. You know, these are the things I care about.
Yeah, okay, never mind, that's true.
What's the scariest game you've ever played that's not a horror game?
I don't have a good answer to this.
The problem is, a lot of my answers are games that are, like, purport to not be horror games, or are horror games because of the way modern horror, like, indie horror works.
But I'm like, I've already told the story about watching Deus Ex.
I thought Goonies 2 was scary as a kid. There's something about, like, the way the first person rooms and felt, like, maze-like and confusing to me. It was just difficult to parse. I thought that was kind of freaky. That's, like, my problem answer.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a side-scrolling game, but you go into rooms, and the rooms are, like, they're like deja vu. They're, like, just, like, first-person rooms, and you can, like, examine and hit, and, like, there's verbs to use in the rooms in, like, an adventure game style. But then suddenly there's two castles, right? There's, like, you go through the castle, you go into a room, and then you exit the door, and you'll be in a different castle, and it's, like, I was six. I couldn't parse that and put it together, right? That's what was happening.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, when I think of examples of this, I can only think of game, like... I can think of games that aren't horror games, but if I was to say, like, oh, Demon's Souls, right? It's not a horror game, but the things that are scary about it are when it does horror stuff, right?
Yes.
It's when something jumps out of a room because it's quiet, which is, while the game is not technically a horror game, I think that counts in the spirit of the answer. That's just a game doing scary stuff.
A Diner Dash, where I have to manage all the clocks at the end right before I lose, is scary.
That's true. You're terrified, as established by this episode, you're terrified of clocks.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily have one. Looks like I've told the story about the opening cutscene of Deus Ex Invisible War that scared the shit out of me as a kid many times. So that's, I guess, a point to that answer again. I was terrified of Ocarina of Time back in the day as a child, right? Mm-hmm. And even that, I think kind of, if that was true for any kids, I think that falls under the Dark Souls stuff. Like, if you're scared by the part where you travel to the future and the whole town is dead and there's like ghosts everywhere, that it's doing horror stuff for kids, right? Like,
yeah.
I can't think of a good answer to this because I just don't necessarily think anything applies here.
Yeah. Bram writes in, Prezi is one of those franchises where I heard people say only the first game's worth playing, the rest are bad. That's an attitude I kind of distrust. What's the most wrong anyone's ever been about only the first entry series of this franchise is good, taking your experience?
What's the most wrong?
Yeah, I can't think of too many because I feel like video games have the thing where it's like the second one's a good one. And I sometimes disagree with that.
Yeah.
Mass Effect, looking at you, Mass Effect.
But it's not like you're like, oh, Mass Effect 1's really good.
I mean, if there was a part of my life where I was.
Yeah, I was saying, but not anymore.
Assassin's Creed, I'm like, Assassin's Creed 1 is perfectly good. People are wrong about that.
Because, I mean, there's ones where I think this, but, like I think this about Dead Rising, kind of. Like, there's bits of 2 that I kind of like, but, like, 1 is the Dead Rising game. But I don't think that's wrong. That's just the opinion I have. So there are times where I hold this opinion. I think, like, the times that people have tried to copy it and imitate it have been less successful.
Oh, yeah, I have this opinion about Doom. You really don't need Doom 1.
Yeah.
Doom 3 is interesting, but, like, you know, I can take it or leave it.
I think at times that I've held this opinion, but I can't think of times that like someone else held this opinion and I've thought, you're stupid.
Yeah. I guess there's people out there like Metal Gear Solid was the shit. And then I'm like, no, come on now. Okay, no one's had that opinion in 25 years, but they used to exist.
If you want to make up the guy that was like, Metal Gear Solid was good.
The people who were really mad at Metal Gear Solid 2 were many, 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 many.
It's just so... I saw a video on YouTube and I was so incensed by the thumbnail. Because it was a thumbnail of Kojima, and it was like, this genius can always change the narrative. And it had three examples on it. The first example was Metal Gear Solid 2. It was like hated or whatever. And I can't remember the adjectives, but like, you know. That, true. Then it was like Metal Gear Solid 5, unfinished. Death Stranding became prophetic. And I'm like, those games were popular. You can't do... Metal Gear Solid 5 and Death Stranding did not have MGS2 style, like, reanalyses in the public consciousness. They were just hits at the time.
Yeah.
There was no fucking cult redemption story for Death Stranding and Metal Gear Solid 5. They were just blockbuster hits. You can't fucking lie to me. I know Metal Gear Solid 5 is now old enough for you can just lie about the like cultural things, but I was there. I was literally there.
Yeah,
I had two. Oh, sorry, you go.
No, go ahead.
I was going to go in a whole different direction.
Oh, so was I. I want to imagine the person who says about Devil May Cry because I kind of respect it. If you're like Devil May Cry 1 is good, and then they fucked off and ruined it. I think
Devil May Cry 1 is the best one, but I don't like.
Well, I would say 1 or 4. I really like 4.
Yeah.
Even though this back half is like a mess.
I wouldn't like write off the rest of them. So I think if you like write off the rest of Devil May Cry, I wouldn't agree.
Yeah.
I had two thoughts in order this week. And the first thought was like, a Kojima game is coming out in a week and I just don't care. I'm probably not going to pick it up, even out of curiosity. Maybe I will when people start talking about it. But like I haven't even like consciously not thought to not play it. I just haven't been paying attention or caring. And then I had the second thought of, there's only actually been one Kojima game released since I started caring about them in the time. This is the second one.
Yeah.
Because of how video games work.
Yeah.
That I can have my entire decade-long arc of, you know, this thing's cool, I'm obsessed with it, to now I'm kind of like disillusioned and over it. But only one video game came out in that whole cycle.
Yeah.
Fucking bad culture.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree.
Anyway.
Penny writes in, Thanksgiving excuse to finally get around for this one after beating the original a couple years ago. What enemy type is your favorite in this game, or is it anything other than the laughing Eraserhead babies?
The laughing Eraserhead babies are pretty good. The thing is, I just like... It did come to a point where I just appreciated any enemies that didn't require me to do something really annoying.
I like the ones where you shoot them once and they kind of explode, and you're supposed to like get away from them, but really you can just kind of shoot them by, like, immediately, and they'll be far enough away that they just explode.
I like the ones where I can stand away and just like fucking blast them all, like the scorpions, because they're really slow, and then I just shoot them and they explode.
Yeah.
You know, the bats, the upgraded bats.
When you get to the guys who are just like number nine but like normal with it, like the fucking, they're just like, they're just blue guys from Uncharted, basically.
They are so blue guys. Like, what if, hey, so I've got a thought. If this guy exists on every development team from the year 1985 to the present day, and he comes in and he says, hey, what if about like three quarters through the game we introduce an enemy type that takes 5 hours to kill, and you had to fight like 10 of them, like, all the time. Yeah.
The only one of these that are good is the hunters in Resident Evil.
You can just run around them!
Yeah. Well, yeah, Resident Evil's is better than most games.
I mean, that's the actual thing that kind of, like, on a top level makes Parasite Eve 2 weird, is that fights give XP, so you can't do the Resident Evil thing where you just don't fight guys.
Yeah.
But the entire genre is designed around fighting guys being a drain on resources, and that a decision you only make out of like panic and necessity. So it's very strange. It doesn't have that. You just have to kill 1,000 of those fucking number nine guys.
Yeah.
There's so many of them.
Yes. Ancient writes in RPGs, do you have a preference for battle screens where you can see your guys Final Fantasy style versus ones where you can't Dragon Quest style?
I like both.
I like the Etranazi style where you, like, there's portraits, but like you're not seeing them on the map or anything. I don't need that.
I love when they have, like, because it's just portraits, they animate the portraits, like, tweening left and right.
Yeah. Yeah. Etranazi does not do that, but...
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, I don't necessarily need to see my guys. The thing is, when I can see my guys, I really want like a, and this is not every, obviously many games don't do this, 3D models kind of ruin this for everybody, but I do like the, like, Final Fantasy V, I see everyone's job when I change jobs.
Oh yeah.
If I can just see the armor, like when you go all out and it's like, I can see when I put on a new hat, but the new hat looks like, that's great. That's like Dragon Quest IX, but I don't know if you see your guys in battle in Dragon Quest IX or not. You do have guys. There's like a whole dress-up mechanic in that game, basically. But
I haven't played 9, so I don't know.
Yeah, it's been so long. I'm just gonna really quickly DQ9 battle screen, because I don't remember how they did it. You see your guys on the map in that.
The
like or in battle, like there's just a battle, like it's just like it's Final Fantasy style, where it's just like here's 3D models against some slimes, sort of stuff.
When I was having my, like, this game's weird reaction to Dragon Quest III HD2D, I went to see what the reception was and what the negative reviews were like. And like, a lot of them were just complaining, why can't you see your guys animate in battle? Like, that was the thing everyone was mad about. I was like, that's the problem people have? I hate gamers.
I don't understand. I don't understand that. I don't need that in my game.
Gamers the washed.
Yes. I don't like have a strong preference for another. I played many games that are do both, you know?
Yep.
Like,
I'm fine with both.
Yep. Hilver writes in, what additional category would you add to the classic GameSpot scoring rubric, which, to remind everyone, is graphics, gameplay, sound value, and reviewer's tilt? Density.
Just density. I mean, isn't that value?
I don't know. Here's the thing is, like, too high density is bad, and too low density is bad.
That's true.
But the thing is, it's like it the idea that like density can't be measured on a scale where 10 is the best and 1 is the worst. It has to be measured on a scale where like 1 is like super acidic and 10 is too basic, right? It's like a pH scale, not a reviewer scale.
That's true.
Yeah. Density, I want to be at like a 7, or like a 6 or 7. But sometimes I want like a 3 or 4. You know, sometimes I want a little low density gaming. What if I could go back and retroactively add one to all GameSpot reviews, I would want perceived historical relevance.
Oh, fuck. So they have to, at the time, call their shot.
Yeah.
Yes, you're right.
Yeah.
Cultural longevity. That's what I'm adding. Yeah. You gotta cool it. You gotta fucking Babe Ruth that shit.
Which is different value. Well, I want longevity. Like, in 10 years, will you be remembering this game? And I would love to see what people say.
I mean longevity, but if I said that, people would just assume that means how long the game is. But no, yeah. I mean, you need to tell me if people are going to care about Sin in a decade.
Oh, Jeff Gerson's like, people will care about this the most.
I would love to have that appended onto every review. That'd be so good.
Yeah.
I'm trying to look up what the game trailers review categories were.
I don't remember them being that interesting.
Well, no, the part that I always thought was that there's the two of them are the fucking same. They always broke their review into three categories, and one's like presentation, one's gameplay, and I think the other one's design. And I just thought gameplay and design are the same thing. How do I separate the different things? But I don't remember.
Also, presentation and design are the same thing.
Well, yes. But I can't fuck, because I search game trailers, and it doesn't come up with the reviews. It comes up with people talking about game trailers.
Yeah, I don't know.
I have to go to one of the reviews and scroll through. I'm sure I can do that. But, like, I'm fairly sure. I don't remember if it was design or if it was a different one, but it was something that was basically just, like, two categories that are the same fucking thing.
Yeah.
Yes, story, design, gameplay, and presentation were the ones they had.
Okay. Design is literally all those three things put together.
Why is it in a separate category? You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
DW writes in, we've got a lot of remakes and remasters for classic games, many of them either quite good or at least don't replace the original while doing its own thing. You think Parasite Eve as a series could use a remake or re-release? So I was thinking about this when I was playing it, and I was like, the moment's passed, but if they had made like a Parasite Eve in the mold of like the Resident Evil 2 and 3 remakes, but just like an entirely new, like maybe like a kind of a soft remake of one, but like incorporate some stuff from 2, just like a whole new Aya Brea. This is the story of Aya Brea in New York City. I think it would have gone crazy. I think it's over. I don't think any people care now, but I think you could have done that and it'd been a really big deal.
Yeah, I would agree.
I would play that. I'd be really excited for that.
The thing I was thinking is they should re-release this game, but add voice acting, but like period appropriate voice acting.
It's super weird this game doesn't have voice acting to me.
I mean, because it doesn't, because Parasite Eve 1 has Square Enix RPG-style dialogue, where you put them through the text, and, they do the Final Fantasy VII emotes, whereas this game has Metal Gear Solid cutscenes, where
it has Resident Evil cutscenes. It has Resident Evil cutscenes, which is a voice video game for the PlayStation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, no, because Resident Evil cutscenes don't really have angles in the way. This has Metal Gear Solid cutscenes.
I mean, Resident Evil has, they like cuts to Barry kicking open the door and stuff. Yeah, no, it totally has angles. What are you talking about?
Well, I just think, like, this game is a little more cinematic than Resident Evil.
It is a little more cinematic than Resident Evil, but, like, I do think if this is such in the Resident Evil mode, but if Resident Evil wasn't voiced, you're like, what are you even doing here?
And the weird part is, like, occasionally, like, a character will say a line.
Yeah, yeah, it's super weird.
But it's, like, seemingly arbitrary about who gets what.
Yeah.
It's very strange.
DW then goes and say the wrongest thing anyone's ever said in an email to our podcast. It'd be a great way to play without tank controls, since I find them awkward to move around in. No, you're wrong. Stop that.
So
this is a memory from 2001, but you're wrong. 2001, he was wrong.
Many of the complaints about this game were like, oh, fucking tank controls. And the amount of that simply didn't bother me because I've just played old Resident Evil is really fun. I'm like, it's just, yeah, tank controls. They're normal. It's a normal control scheme.
Yeah, it's a good control scheme.
Doesn't bother me in the slightest. I was immediately adjusted because I played games with tank controls recently. I think the anti-tank controls brigade are wrong, and
they've been wrong. They've always been wrong. Yeah, just fucking get over yourselves. You want every game to play like Call of Duty? Get the fuck out of here. DW then says, I've been playing Romance Six Saga 2 Remake. I fear I may become a Saga sicko. Is there any notorious series that seems impenetrable to you? You feel you might be able to make it yours if you give it a shot.
I mean, Saga will hopefully have this when I go through them.
Dwarf Fortress is mine. I feel like I could be a Dwarf Fortress sicko.
And you don't have the time.
I don't have the time. But I want to. I want it so bad.
They should let you play Dwarf Fortress at work.
They should.
Then you'd have the time.
Andrew, this one is for you, Jackson. I've been playing Metal Gear Solid 2 recently and really struggling with the control scheme changes from Metal Gear Solid 1. It's cool that you have more ability to do things, but it makes the game unnecessarily clunky for me, especially the leaning in and out of cover while aiming down sights. What's a game sequel that changed or built from the controls in the original is too much for you? Counterexamples are also welcome. Tips about how to play Metal Gear Solid 2 good, not run into guards constantly are welcome.
This is, I mean, I don't want to be rude.
You're just going to say skill issue?
I don't really know how to help someone who doesn't. I just don't run into the cards.
I play the game on easy, is what I do.
That's another thing. I do actually understand this, in that, like, Metal Gear Solid 1, you just press square and fire, right? Whereas Metal Gear Solid 2 is much more about, like, okay, hold square, I press R1, press square again, because that's how you shoot, and then you have to, the triggers do the ducking and moving, and, like, it does become a little claw grip, it can do, when doing that. Like, the addition of aiming mode in those games, I kind of like it. I like that aiming mode is, like, a weird, physically demanding thing to do.
You're not supposed to do it very often.
Yeah, I just, like, you compare it to the post 4 version where it's just L1 R1, it's the easiest thing in the world. So, yeah. I like that, like, standing and aiming your gun is something that requires, like, investment in the, like, in interactions you have to perform.
Shooting all those drones is a pain in the ass. It should be a pain in the ass.
Yeah. So ultimately this is something I come down to the other side of, in the way that I like it. But I do think there is a purity to MGS1's control that I'm like, so long as you're not being, like, weird about it in terms of the MGS2, why did this game become anime way? I think that saying MGS1 is the best one is a totally normal opinion. In that, like, if I hear someone say MGS1 is the best one, I might be doubtful of them. But once I hear their reasons, I'm like, yeah. I mean, obviously, it's one of the best games ever made. Some days I think it's the best one.
I think it's 2. I still think it's 2.
I think it's between 1 and 3. 2 is kind of annoying to play sometimes. I mean, I love 2 as well. I think 3 is the better one.
Emerus writes in, I love a good, ridiculous pseudoscience explanation for a plot, like what if mitochondrial are sentient and evil? So what are your favorite dumb faux science twists? Well, see our episode on Racing Lagoon.
Yeah, Racing Lagoon has this game, like, I mean, lapped. Ha ha!
Ah, clever. That's a racing pun. Yeah.
This Racing Lagoon goes a whole other way. You want a game that buys the Square Enix source of what if we did this, like, same kind of generic plot, but, like, dumped a whole bunch of pretentious artiness on it for no reason.
The other famous one is Final Fantasy VIII. The way Final Fantasy VIII does it's, like, the way it's... I don't even want to talk about it, because if you haven't played Final Fantasy VIII, you should do that. But there's, like, reveals around the way its magic system interfaces with its world. It's very good.
Yes. I do enjoy a good pseudoscience explanation, but I'm also, like, not that invested. I kind of switch off when they start talking about nanomachines. There are times when they tried to pretend, like, oh, the ghosts were just nanomachines in Metal Gear. That's when I don't like that one. No, he was a fucking ghost.
I want the Patriots to be the miasma of the ghosts on the White House walls.
Right. No, they were just... they weren't just AI. They turned off the AI and they found the ghost of America in the soup.
Yeah, it actually was just the 6 guys from Metal Gear Solid 3.
No! No! Ah, no, 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 no. Shut up, Kojima. I hate you.
Yeah. Sorry. What if the real answer is the stupidest answer all along?
It's true.
That's it for questions. Again, I'm normalmappingpodcast@gmail.com. Jackson, what are we playing next time? I don't remember the name of the game you picked.
That's a great question. I believe it is called Children of the Sun.
Yes, I think that's correct. That's what I would have said it was without looking, so...
Yes, I didn't look. I was midway through typing to look, but then I was like, I ran out of ways to say this sentence really slowly. But I was correct anyway.
You picked that because I was like, I have my surgery at the end of the month, so we're gonna have to get this one done early, and I want something relatively short. And this seemed really cool, so I'm excited about it.
Yeah, it's like a puzzle shooter where you have one bullet and you control the path of the bullet.
Yeah, and so you gotta, like, go around a location and, like, take your one shot to do the thing you need to do. That seems super sick. And it's only, like, 3 hours long, supposedly, so.
Yeah, much more puzzle than shooter, because it's, like, you only have the one bullet, and you can control the bullet while it moves.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited for that one. People seem to like it. So I was like, yeah, let's try this one.
Cool. Yeah, I'm excited, so we'll check that out. I will be on Novel Not New sometime in July to talk about Sword and Fairy. So look forward to that. Yep. Then that'll be out of my life. And then I'll be recovering. We're going to have another short game next month. We'll announce it. Or the month after that, we'll announce that when we're playing Children of the Sun. I think that's it. I think that's it. So plugs.
Yeah, you can find me at headfallsoff.com on Blue Sky. You can find the podcast we do at abnormalmapping.com. You can find the blog I started at alltimebangers.com. Ba ba bam.
Yeah. You can find me on Twitter at Blue Sky, polarbearsummer.online. If you want to support our podcast, you go to patreon.com/normalmapping. For $1 a month, you get the Great Gundam Project. We're currently finishing up Gundam Age, and Eureka 7's already over.
That's true.
Hell yeah. That episode might have, I don't know when this is coming out. You know what? That's a good question. I don't have a good answer for you yet. Cause I got some, there's something every week, day this week, basically, other than Monday. And I don't know if I want to turn it around in a day. For $5, you get Blockbusters. We watch Hollywood movies for that. Last time we did Serpico. Next time we're doing A Room with a View, which I understand is not a Hollywood movie. Shut up. Don't talk to me about it. For $10, you get Void Play for every 2 weeks we goof off. Last time was about the Summer Games Fest. I don't even know what we're going to do this time, to the point where I'm like, should we do that a different day? I don't know if I have anything right after this. I'm going to be honest with you.
We'll figure it out.
If you want to go watch me play video games on the internet, you can go to youtube.com/@DiaLucina. My friend D and me recently finished playing Indigo Prophecy, which was a bad fucking video game. Didn't really enjoy that one. But now we're playing Blueprints. We're two episodes in, having a great time so far.
I was such a Blueprints hater. And then everyone, all my other friends started playing. I'm like, oh, this game's pretty good. And now I feel so bad.
Like, oh. Blame Molly. Molly was the impetus to everyone getting into Blueprints.
I just like, oh, yeah, what if I played Myst, but I had to do a fucking boring-ass roguelike to just solve a puzzle?
Well, what if instead you and your friend were talking about the design of mansions while you did it on a YouTube video? That's what I did.
It is fundamentally playing these kind of puzzle games with someone else next year is a different experience.
Yeah.
Like, turned Oberdin from a game that I was struggling with to my favorite game ever, right? Like,
I was like, I don't know if I'd like the roguelike part of this. I'm sure if me and Dia did it, we'd be fine, because we would just like shoot the shit while we're going through stuff, and that's been true already. So
I'm hoping that while you're recovering, we can get our Myst 4 playthrough in.
We'll see.
I desperately want to. I know you're busy with a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But like, it really made Myst 3 being able to do that over Skype.
Other than the part where it's like kind of a pain in the ass to tell. I think with Myst 4, it might be one you stream it to me, and I like, I don't
want. Oh, you like Dia does, like, yeah, just yeah. So you can, yeah.
Because it was really hard sometimes to describe what I had done versus what like I needed you to do when I like found a thing.
If you would like to just have, I'll do all the work, and then you can just like watch it on your iPad in bed.
Well, I mean, I would probably have a notebook, so I'd probably be at my desk. But yes, basically.
Yeah.
So since I'll be recovering from major surgery, yeah, it might not be a bad idea.
And. Yeah, I mean, with Dia, you have to record, but like, you could literally lie down and do this all.
Yes, I could lie down.
I don't know the specific situation, but yeah, I'd be willing to do that.
Okay. Yeah, I think that'd make it easier.
For sure.
Anyway, that's it. I hope everyone enjoyed. If you did, please retweet the podcast. Go tell Boo, she did a great job with the art.
Yeah!
This particular one for Parasite Eve 2 is Boo's doing entirely. It was just came wholesale with the idea of how to do it, so... I didn't even pick the picture for this one.
I mean, Boo got very lucky, because I would say that Parasite Eve very much in Boo's design language.
Yes, absolutely. When we have to do Piku Niku.
Yep, it's true.
Anyway, thanks for listening. Retweet this. I think I said that already, but I don't care. Say it again. And we'll see you next month. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for stopping. Bye.
So true. That was 2 hours. Fuck me, that was 2 hours.